Blog Talk Radio.
Tell me, where am I supposed to go? Supposed to believe? If only you knew what I knew, then you could see just what I see.
Enhance your mind. recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
Took a lecture. I'm going to cover a number of different things. A lot of this to some people may seem like way out initially, you know, which it seemed to me, but I tried to gather as much facts as possible outside of the Moors to prove what we're saying. You know, a lot of times people say, well, it's y'all Moors saying this, but show me something else that's saying what y'all saying, that proves what y'all saying. So I tried to gather as much as possible. And I have a lot of information here to share. I tried to organize as best as possible because a lot of information, and I just tried to put it in the best way so that you could be able to grasp it. I'm going to start off speaking about a man by the name of Horace Greeley. And he was part of a worldwide conspiracy to conceal the information that I'm about to speak on today. And there's a definite reason why this information was concealed. Horace Greeley was the editor, was the founder and editor of a paper called the New York Tribune, which was located in New York City. This newspaper was a national newspaper as well as international, and it had a profound effect on the consciousness of European people. At the time when this was put together, you know, sometimes we think that Europeans, that, you know, they've been a world power, you know, going way back to so-called Greeks and Romans time, all that's fictional. All that's fictional. They just got themselves together as recently as 1854 to 1865. This is when they finally got themselves together to govern the planet on a global level, as recent as that date. And this is around the time of the Civil War. And at the end of the Civil War, they was finally able to put certain things together, bring stuff together. At the time, during Horace Greeley's time, they were in a similar condition that we are in now, in the sense that you had many different white organizations at that time. They were all striving for the uplifting of their people, but they had many different ideologies, many different groups of themselves, all striving and vying with each other, sometimes bitter conflict with each other, in order to achieve that goal, which is to uplift of their people. The key role that Horace Greeley played was that his paper, his organ, his New York Tribune, was able to gather up all those people and give them a sense of a unified context or paradigm or direction that they was all able to unify themselves behind, regardless of their different ideological differences and so on and so forth. And this is what we're hoping that the Moorish paradigm or the Moorish Renaissance that's taking place now will be able to do. That it will serve as a paradigm that will be able to unify our people in regards to different ideologies. You know, coming out from New York City, you know, and I sell books in Harlem on 125th Street, as well as in Bed-Stuy in Brooklyn. And being in those two places, I've come in contact with every aspect of the so-called black movement or national or whatever you want to call it. I've come in contact with every aspect of it. Hebrew Israelites, every sect and division of Islam you could think of. Black nationalists, all different types of groups, you know, and it seems like this may be able to unify us behind a certain paradigm. A paradigm is a certain perspective or outlook on the world, and this is what we're about to do. So we're about to have a paradigm shift. We're about to come into a new paradigm, a paradigm that will allow us to rise our people up and take our rightful place in history. Horace Greeley. Prior to Horace Greeley's time, the European, or what we call the white man, or whatever, he was known as the red man, and they called themselves red men. As a matter of fact, Horace Greeley was a member of a political party known as the Red Men's Whigs Party, which eventually he promoted to be changed to the Republican Party. The present-day Republican Party originally was called the Red Men's Whig Party. Horace Greeley, as well as Abraham Lincoln, were members of the Red Men's Whig Party. He suggested to them that they change their names to the Republican Party, and as opposed to call themselves red men, call themselves white men. And this was to set up this whole dynamic of white being pure and good and white being bad and inferior, this whole white supremacist mentality or paradigm that was being perfected at this time. Now, just to give you an idea of the power and of the influence of Harsh Greeley. This was a book taken from a book called Harsh Greeley and the New York Tribune during the Civil War. And it says in the introduction, it says all contemporaries, friends, and foes of life alike testified that the Tribune exerted the greatest influence upon public opinion of any journal in the country during the period under discussion, which was the Civil War period. It goes on to say that the paper furnished the basis of a power national in scope and at times enabled the editor to mold public sentiment more effectively than even the president. Harsh Greeley and that paper, the New York Tribune, actually had more influence over the mindset of European people on an international scale than even the president of the United States. Karl Marx was just the London correspondent of the New York Tribune. This was an international thing that took place here. All right? It also says that it would have been difficult to convince the great family of rural subscribers from Western New York to Iowa that the old white-coated philosopher, Harsh Greeley, did not pen every line in their political Bible. Herein lies the crux of the Tribune power and influence. Harsh Greeley was more than the editor of a great newspaper. He had acquired an enviable reputation as an expounder of political views and had actively sponsored the organization of the Republican Party on a national scale. So Harsh Greeley had a great deal of influence. And he was like more or less, let's say, the point man that more or less gathered around him all these different people, covering all different various disciplines, everything from medicine to science to history. Just to give you an example, there's an article I have here called Archaeological Cover-Ups. This is an article that was taken from a magazine called Nexus Magazine. And this is a very good magazine. If you have a chance, get a hold of it, I believe, for the Emmy owner from the Black Mind Building sells this particular magazine. And this particular article, Archaeological Cover-Ups, is dealing with the Smithsonian Institute, which was founded a little bit prior or during Harsh Greeley times in 1829. And it starts off, it mentions, it says, most of us are familiar with the last scene in the popular Indiana Jones archaeological adventure film, Raiders of the Lost Ark, in which an important historical artifact, the Ark of the Covenant from the temple in Jerusalem, is locked in a crate and put in a giant warehouse, never to be seen again. I'm sure you all remember that part at the end where they shipped it in and had all these different boxes marked top secret. It goes on to say, the Smithsonian Institute is an independent federal agency. Sound familiar? IRS, Federal Reserve, so on. An independent federal agency has been actively suppressing some of the most interesting and important archaeological discoveries made in America. Now, what they were covering up was our history in this hemisphere. At this time, this is the time when they concocted this myth that we were all brought over here on slave ships from Africa to be their slaves. This is one of the biggest lies they ever put together. You're going to see the massive proportions of the lie that they have put forward. Yeah, there were some that were brought here from Africa. But by far, the majority of us were already here. We had a civilization that went from Alaska all the way down to Chile, which they refer to as the ancient mound builders, the one who built the civilization and built the mounds and pyramids all up and down this hemisphere. And you're going to see further what is the significance and the major role that we play in civilization here in this hemisphere. And the Smithsonian Institute was key in covering up these facts. And then they also mention it here about the Vatican and how they have an underground library in the Vatican, the walls 5 feet thick and 24-hour security, what they're hiding down there. And you mentioned how they have things down there that will conflict with the church's credibility or perhaps cast an official text in doubt. So they keep these things hidden. And it says, and it goes on to say, it says, when Thomas, the guy's name is Thomas, he was the director of the Eastern Mound Division of the Smithsonian Institute's Bureau of Ethnology. It says, when Thomas came to the Bureau of Ethnology, he was a pronounced believer in the existence of a race of mound builders distinct from the American Indians, the people who they're saying America with the long string hair, so on and so forth. He believed that there was a race of mound builders distinct from the American Indians. However, John Wesley Powell, the director of the Bureau of Ethnology, a very sympathetic man toward the American Indians, had lived with some of these ones who they call Indians, and he felt sorry for them. He felt that they say he felt sorry for them, and they were treated unfairly, and that they should get the credit for this. Now, remember now, they were in the process of wiping these people out. So these are getting credit to a people that you know you're about to wipe out anyway. It goes on to say the Smithsonian began to promote the idea that Native Americans at that time being exterminated in the Indian Wars were descended from advanced civilizations and were worthy of respect and protection. They also began a program of suppressing any archaeological evidence that led credence to the school of thought known as Diffusionism, a school which believes that throughout history there has been widespread dispersion of culture and civilization via contact by ship and major trade routes. Keep that in mind, because remember, Moor means navigator. We were a maritime nation all over the planet. And keep that in mind, because we're going to get deeper into that. This is the school of thought known as Diffusionism believed that throughout history there was a widespread dispersion of culture and civilization via contact by ship and major trade routes. It goes on and says, but the Smithsonian opted for the opposite school, known as isolationism. Isolationism holds that most civilizations are isolated from each other and that there has been very little contact between them, especially those that are separated by bodies of water. And this intellectual war that started in the 1880s, right around Horace Greeley time. Now, this school of thought isolationism gives credence to their whole philosophy of us being so-called third world people and them being so-called first world people. They're saying, this is the first time the world has been unified as what's known as the global village, or unified in economy and trade and so on and so forth. Wrong. There's been two civilizations prior to that in which it was unified by the Moors. First the ancient Moabites or Moabites, and then the Moors. It goes on to say, when the contents of many ancient mounds and pyramids of the Midwest were examined, it was shown that the history of the Mississippi River valleys was that of an ancient and sophisticated culture that had been in contact with Europe and other areas. Not only that, the contents of many mounds revealed burials of huge men, sometimes 7 or 8 feet tall, in full armor with swords and sometimes huge treasures. All this was being found by the Smithsonian. This gets back into the Bible where they talk about these different giants and Nephilim and so on and so forth. And it goes on and says, for instance, when Spiro Mound, Oklahoma was excavated in the 1930s, a tall man in full armor was discovered along with a pot of thousands of pearls and other artifacts, the largest such treasure so far documented. We have many more treasures here. The elders told us that the Moors did more building underground than we did above ground here. And you see what we did build above ground, or what's left. What the Dominicans and Franciscan priests did not destroy and vandalize and loot and burn and pillage. And underground, they are aware of the vast underground tunnel networks that we have built underneath this country, where you was able to travel from New York City to California underground without having to come above ground once. And their military has taken over some of these underground facilities, but they can go over so far deep. And they know infrared and satellite pictures and so on and so forth. They know that there's other things deeper down that they can't get to. And when the conquistadors came away, they found whole villages and cities empty with people. They didn't know where they went. Oh, yeah. Continuing on, it says, he was told by a former employee that Smithsonian employee was dismissed for defending the view of diffusionism. And it said the Smithsonian at one time had actually taken a barge full of unusual artifacts out into the Atlantic Ocean and dumped it into the ocean. This is what they was doing with some of the things that they found. And it mentions here about stone coffins that were discovered in 1892 in Alabama, which were then sent to the Smithsonian Institute and then lost, according to the newsletter. And then going further down, it says, the head curator says, we have not been able to find the specimens in our collections, so records show that they were received. And it says, the Alaskan mound, they found a mound up in Alaska. And it's that the master mind was in fact a graveyard of gigantic human remains consisting of crania and long leg bones. The crania measured from 22 to 24 inches from base to crown. Since an adult normally measures about 8 inches from back to front, such a large crania would imply immense size for a normally proportioned human. In fact, the habit of flattening the skull of an infant and forcing it to grow in an elongated shape was a practice used by ancient Peruvians, Mayans, flatheads, Egyptians. You see some of the different pictures where they had the long head, even in the South. You know, I heard stories where they had to actually shake the baby's head with their hands. You know, all this is directly related to us. Audio said that they found statues ranging from less than an inch to 6 feet. Now, check this out. Depicting reptiles or dinosaurs, some of them in active association with humans, showing us contemporary with dinosaurs in this hemisphere. And we want to know who was the first people, who's the true Native Americans. There's nobody here standing on this, in this part of this hemisphere that can trace their roots back here further than us. Contemporary with dinosaurs? It goes on to say they also found portrayals of Bigfoot and aquatic monster-like creatures, weird human animal mixtures. This gets into another lesson that's part of the course when we get to Yaku and how we found out different types of experimentation in the Pyramid University of Yucatan, Mexico, where they have found all kinds of remnants and artifacts showing all kinds of crosses. We think genetic engineering and gene splicing in vitro fertilization, we think these are new things. Our ancestors were mastering things long time ago in the Pyramid University. This is how we made what we call the white race. By our scientists. Ain't no natural selection or none of that made no white race because they was up in the North Pole. What about the Eskimos? Continuing on, right? It's a lot of information. We're going to try and cover as much of this as possible. Now, check this out. It says, historian and linguist Carl Hart, editor of World Explorer, then obtained a hiker's map of the Grand Canyon from a bookstore in Chicago. Pouring over the map, we were amazed to see that much of the area on the north side of the canyon has Egyptian names. The area around 94 Mile Creek and Trinity Creek had areas with names like Tower of Set, Tower of Ra, Horus Temple, Osiris Temple, Isis Temple. In the heart of the canyon area were such names as Cheops Pyramid, the Buddha Cloister, Buddha Temple, Manu Temple, a Shiva Temple. All of this is found in the Grand Canyon, and they have closed those sections off because they said it's too dangerous. All this is sitting right there to this day. And this is another article from the same magazine that deals with exploration. This is from a front page from the Fifth Gazette from April 1909. And the title says, Exploration in Grand Canyon, Mysteries of Immense Rich Cavern Being Brought to Light. And it talks about how it says, Mr. Kincaid found like a cavern, like a crypt, with human heads, solid rock carved by human hands and tablets and all kinds of things he found in there. And he had to go nearly a mile underground, about 1,280 feet below the surface. The long main passage has been delved into to find another mammoth chamber from which radiate scores of passageways like spokes on a wheel. Up in New York, with you got all kinds of old names like Day Street, EY, Wall Street, all the same area, right by Wall Street. Right in the Wall Street area where they found the ancestral burial grounds, you got a Moore Street and a Day Street, D-E-Y. And the elders told us there were five groups of Moors there, the Bays, the Days, the Owls, the Eels, and the Alis. And that gives us the five civilized tribes, as well as the five pairs of sons of Poseidon, who govern Atlantis. And we're going to get into that connection also with Atlantis. It was an Indian legend dealing with the Hopi Indians. The original Hopis were our ancestors as well. And it says that in connection with the story, it is notable that among the Hopi Indians, the tradition is told that their ancestors once lived in the underworld in the Grand Canyon. A distinction arose between the good and the bad, the people of the one heart and the people of the two hearts. It sound like the Boulay. They have two hearts. Well, it sound like some of those Uncle Tom Negroes who have two hearts. You know what I'm saying? They want to be down with the white man, but they want to be down with us. You know, two hearts. And it says that Macheco was their chief, counsel the good ones with the one heart to leave the underworld, the underground city, and but there was no way out. The chief then caused a tree to grow up and pierce the roof of the underworld, and the people of one heart climbed out. They carried by the Red River, which is in Colorado, and grew grain and corn. They sent out a message to the temple of the sun asking the blessings of peace, goodwill, and rain for the people of one heart. The messenger never returned. But today at the Hopi villages at sundown can be seen the old men of the tribe on the housetop gazing towards the sun looking for the messenger. When he returns their land to their land, when he returns their lands and ancient dwelling places will be restored to them. We are those messengers with the spirits. We the ones they're looking for. And all those lands will be returned to us. All right? Now, in connection, and I found a book. Now, I kept telling myself, you know, this whole thing, now this is a whole other deep area that has to be further researched and looked into. You know, something bothered me about this whole thing about Greeks and Romans and these Europeans going way back to 500 BC. I said, something don't sound right here. I had a theory. Something told me that somewhere in my heart's greatest time is that they put, you know, they talk about this Renaissance and all this. Renaissance, the rebirth of classical culture, Greek and Roman culture, whatever. That wasn't no rebirth of no Greek. That was the birth of it for them. They concocted this thing. At that time, students of the Moors, they were students of the Moors. And they were going around, the artists were going around making sculptures and stuff. And these were the ancient Greeks. A lot of these sculptures had heads missing that they replaced. Now, I said, there got to be something that will give me some hints. Remember now, because all this information at Hartsfield's time was kept out of the institutions of higher learning. But you will find it scattered here and there. You will find a sentence here, a paragraph here, a page here. It's scattered. You got to be almost like a detective, but you got to have the context. You got to have the paradigm first to know what you're even looking at. Once you get this particular context and this particular paradigm, a lot of things that you already know will begin to make a lot more sense in this particular context. And I said, there gotta be a book where I can find that uncover because something just don't sound right. Then I came across something where Erasmus from the so-called Renaissance period was writing letters to other students under the pen name of Cicero. I said, hold up. And then you hear about, for instance, Francis Bacon was originally one who they called Shakespeare, and he had a literary group or a secret society, a secret literary group, who were putting out all kinds of works on Moorish science under the pen name of Shakespeare. So I said, what's going on here? Something don't seem right. You got to get the feel for this thing now. One day, this is where the ancestors come in, because once you're dealing with the ancestors, they will guide you certain things. The ancestors were constantly, that whole summer, they were guiding me to all kinds of books, all kinds of, and at that time, I was teaching the course. And I have some of the packets here. I have about 10 or 5 of them already. So, and I was just at that time, and I was constantly, each week they were just sending me, and I was coming, I was just walking to a shelf. Damn, this is a book, boom, you would be in there. And this was, I wasn't even using the catacomb a lot at a certain point. I was just walking in and just pulling stuff out. And I would get the sections, like I would be teaching on a topic like sex versus constitutional law, and I would get, there would be a whole section on that subject. And I say, man, how am I going to get the best book for the class or whatever, you know? And I would go right to a particular book. And it will be exactly the book that sort of like encompasses all the other ones. And it will be exactly the right one. So this is very important that we tune in with the ancestors because they will lead us and guide us certain things that we need to know at this time. So one day I just got an urge to go to this bookstore, Barnes & Noble, up in Yonkers. When I went there, I seen two nuns. And it just hit my mind because somebody had told me, one of the elders said that C.M. Bay had got a lot of this information. C.M. Bay, who gave us a lot of information, got it from a Catholic priest who had this stuff hid. So I thought about that when I seen them. I walked a little bit further, and there it was, the book I was looking for, a big, gigantic book, and on the chapter book it says Faith. And it talks about all the fake artifacts that will be at Faith by these Europeans. And this is one excerpt for it from it, and it says the 19th century, the great age of faking. And this is right around the time of Horace Greeley. And it says the 19th century saw a fundamental shift in the relationship of Western culture to the past. And it says a man by the name of Horace Walpole, sounds almost familiar, Horace Greeley, Horace Walpole and his circle had discovered the romance of the past, even in objects surviving from the period of barbarism between the fall of the Roman Empire and the Renaissance. The discovery arriving on the eve of the Industrial Revolution, a period in which spreading affluence was combined with the increasing desire to escape from the present, because they know they had no history at that present time, produced an explosion in collecting from classical antiquities and old master paintings. The mania spread to encompass the chivalric glamour of the Middle Ages, the sculpture and decorative arts of the Renaissance, 18th century ceramics, 17th century metalwork, and even towards the end of the century. So in other words, at this time, they were doing all this that they have spaced out over hundreds of years, the Renaissance. They were dealing with all this at this time, and this is the time when they were concocting this whole thing, this whole false history. And it says, the collecting mania created a paradise for dishonest dealers. As each new craze took a sudden imbalance between supply and demand, create the perfect opportunity for such people to peddle their fakes before a pool of expertise had been created. It says, craftsmen and some artists were themselves bemused, sometimes embittered by the fact that this old work had suddenly replaced them. So what they did is maintain a living. They started making fakes of so-called old stuff, because the stuff they were making contemporary, it wasn't selling. And they said it was just a craze for so-called antiquities that they began faking these things.
All right?
So that just will make you understand sometimes when you see, you know, they talk about this Greek and this Roman from 500 BC, all that's fictional. And what they did, how great time is also, they shifted time. They added 580 years to our calendar. Of course, to our calendar, this is the year 1414. They added 580 years to throw you off. So things that you, for instance,
let me get into this right here. This is another book. And see, there's certain things, you know, being up in New York, you know,
I've seen Afrocentricity come, reach its peak, but it has not been able to answer the problems of our people. Brothers and sisters still out there killing each other off. They'll come up to you with a big African chest and kill you. They don't care. So it has not been able to meet or solve the problems of our people. And like New York was the center of Afrocentricity. I was out there with the book, I've seen the whole thing. You know what I'm saying? But there were certain limiting factors within it. For one, Afrocentricity means, when you say Afrocentric or centered, that means you're just centering on Africa, and you're excluding a lot of other things. There were certain books, certain things that you wouldn't look into. For instance, I got this information from a book by a guy named Barry Fell. He's a Harvard professor, and he was talking about, Leif Erikson and the Vikings and all stuff like that. So you had Afrocentric, you should come on a Viking. I don't know about that. That ain't got to do with me. That's some white people. Those ones who they're calling Vikings and Danes were Moorish navigators. And in this book that, you know, if you use up what people mind that you wouldn't even look into, he drops a heavy. He has a map right here, just to start with this map. And he has listed Libyans. This is North America. And this is a Harvard professor. Libyans, Norse, Greek, Cretans, Iberians, Jews, Celts, all that here in North America. And he says, he talks about the Iroquois. He says, the Iroquois are believed to have reached North America after most of these settlers have been made possibly from South America around 1200 AD, passing up the Mississippi to drive an enclave into the Algonquin area. And the Iroquois, the Confederacy, was a very important branch of our people because they had a model of a federal government that the Europeans patterned themselves after. George Washington Benjamin Franklin. There's a book called Indian Givens that talks about that. There's also another book called The Secret Destiny of America by Manly P. Hall. All right, and I'm just going to quote some things that was in this book that relates to us. Just give me a moment to get to the pages that I want. He had a chapter in here called Arabs Before Islam. Now, this is very important because this shows you, you know, something that's strange also. I said that the Moors just came about in the 711 AD and the Vedas and stuff like that. Who were the people that the Romans were referred to as Moors? If the Romans and the Greeks were before Islam, Muhammad and Arabs and all that stuff like that, then how were the Greeks and Romans referring to a people contemporary with themselves as Moors? I said, something's not clicking here. Something's not right. I can just find out how they shift the history, you see what I'm saying? You will look, and it seems to me, and more research, like I said, more research has to be done. When they were referring to Carthage, they were referring to the Moors. And Rome was those so-called Franciscans that we were fighting against. You see?
And there's a space there of about 800 years. So I said, wait, how does that space 800 years get in there, right? Then I came across something else by another European scholar by the name of Emmanuel Velikovsky. I'm sure some of you may have heard of Velikovsky. He was looked down upon by all his peers at that time. And now they're coming around to agree what he's saying. He wrote a book called Ramses II and His Times. And in it, he dropped some major bombs. He proved how Ramses II and Nebuchadnezzar, who according to most Orthodox histories are separated by about 800 years, how they were contemporary, how they were at the exact same time, and how when they refer to the Hittite Empire, the Hittites, and Syria, so on and so forth, as if they call it the forgotten or mysterious empire, that wasn't no forgotten mistake. That was the Chaldean Empire. So there was a space, so somewhere along the line, 800 years was added. Now, if you factor that into equation, that would bring Carthage right up to 711 AD with the Moors, the 800-year difference. See, they were playing, the European was a master. What he was doing during this period of time is that he was grasping a history. When Honorable Elijah Muhammad said that he was given 6,000 years to rule, he didn't rule this earth for 6,000 years. He was given dominion or jurisdiction over 6,000 years worth of history. When you look in the books, all his history books start off in historical times at 4,000 B.C., which up to now would be 6,000 years. When you look in the King James Version of the Bible, it starts off 4,004 B.C. So what he did was manipulate and grasp and change up 6,000 years worth of history. The grasping process, when you take a nectarine orange, navel orange that don't have no seeds in it, it's not natural. It cannot perpetuate itself. There's no seed for you to plant. So what they have to do is take a branch, slice it diagonally, take a regular tree, a real orange tree with seeds and everything, cut one of its branches diagonally, and sew it on or tie on to it, and it will grow and sustain itself over the roots of that original tree. This is the grafting process. This is what these Europeans did. They didn't have no history, just like the orange with no seeds. So they had to graft themselves onto already existing histories to give themselves a semblance of antiquity. They had no history. So they graft themselves. The original people inhabited the region that they refer to as Greek was up, dealing with the Mycenaean and the Minoan Moors, who were navigators. The ones who inhabited the region that they refer to as Rome were the Etruscans, who were us. You see? So they had to concoct this false history for them to rise and be in the place of power where they're at right now. They ran into a problem. They found some tablets or whatever that had ancient Libyan or Numidian script, and they never could interpret these things. Then one day, they found out that Arabic was the key to it. But that dude, they said, wait, this is something 200-something B.C. The Arabs didn't come till later on to 700. How was Arabic dealing with that? You see? And this was the key to unlocking these particular scripts, and so they could interpret it, which means that, now they try to say that there was Arabs in North Africa or these different places before Islam. No, there wasn't Arabs. These languages were all part. We used many different languages. C.M. Bay said that Latin was one of our ancient languages. We always associate Latin with European people, but what they call the Indo-European languages. Those are our ancient languages, going to ancient Sanskrit and so on and so forth. We had different languages for different purposes. Latin was a legal, scientific language. Arabic was a more poetic, dealing with more subtle, conveying more subtle ideas and concepts. The so-called adobe houses that you see in Mexico, the Pueblo Indian, you see the exact same thing in North Africa. The exact same type of houses constructed the exact same way. And it makes sense because, like I said, if you join the two parts together, what they call Libya, all that was called connected with America. It was all one thing. So naturally, they're going to have the same type of houses, the same type of climate, everything. And even a dome, same type of thing, built in the sides of the cliffs, all so on and so forth. The same thing is all one knowledge.
And the dome, you follow the entire thing is identical to the Obi Indian. The look at the pictures of the Hopi Indians and look at the Dogon, it's identical.
Same people, same technology.
We found a Washington Street here at North Highland in Atlanta. A Washington Street right off of North Highland.
You'll be surprised. This is, you know, see, they would love for all you to go back to Africa and give up the wealth and birthright of this land here. They had to perpetuate that myth. And because they would know that once you realize who you are, you would claim your birthright to this land right here that belonged to your ancestors. Imagine how mad your ancestors must be to be buried in the ground and see you chasing after another land other than the land that you were born on. And you wonder why you kept so much hell on, so many things happened to you. Because you're running in the wrong direction. Not to say anything wrong with our brothers. Those are brothers on the other side of the Atlantic. And that is like a big mirror, cosmic mirror, what's on one side, on the other side. Ain't no difference. They all just told us that the original now is right here, Old Man Mississippi. The Missouri is the blue, and Ohio is the white now. And where the two come together, they got a city there to this day called Cairo. And the whole region over there, as a matter of fact, to this day, they call Little Egypt. The elders also said that in this hemisphere you have seven cities, the seven churches which are mentioned in the book of Revelation, the seven churches which are in Asia. And those seven cities go from St. Louis up to Chicago, over to Detroit, down into Cleveland, Ohio, over to Pittsburgh, over to Philadelphia, and up into Boston. And if you connect the dots of those seven cities, they give you the constellation of Big Dipper, the Great Bear, which was referred to as Moena, which is also a name that was sometimes called Moore Sisters, Moena. And this is what this death particular kind, and it was said by elders, whoever rules those seven cities rule the planet. Those are seven key cities. And until this day, one of the cities still has the same name in the book, City Philadelphia. And Philadelphia is in what? Pennsylvania, which is the Keystone State. And when you look in the book of Revelation under Philadelphia, it says that you have the keys of David. That what you open it, no man shut up, and that what you shut up, no man open it. And in Philadelphia, what do you see there? They call it the city of brotherly love, because that's what we had as the key to our federal government to the European nations. And you see the Liberty Bell. So if you take this and turn it inside out, got the gong, you got the Liberty Bell. And you wonder why it's cracked. When your liberty was taken from you, that's why it's cracked. You see? The Liberty Bell, and they also refer to the fence as the Liberty Cap. When you see that soft cap that they refer to as the Liberty Cap that's red, that's the fence. And then you look at the coat of arms. The elders also told us that what they called here, this time said the Spanish Empire, was in reality the Moorish Empire. And then you look at the coat of arms for El Salvador. You see the fez on top of it. You look at the coat of arms for Haiti. Fez is on it. Look at the coat of arms for Cuba. Fez is on it. Don't take my word for it. Go see for yourself. The fez is right up on there with a halo around it, just like the all CNI on the dollar bill. The same thing, because this is the pyramid, the all CNI. This has a deep significance. You would be surprised when you put this up on your head. Watch the responses that you get from Europeans, any people. I don't care where they come from. When we be standing there 120-50, all the brothers, we be out there, boys, these feds out there, Germans, they all come by and they look at us. They realize who they are now. They come to, I don't care what country, Pakistan. The rulers of my country, they wear that. Africans come to me. Only big chiefs could wear that in my country. This is a sign of nobility of the rulers of this planet. Continuing on. Those seven cities, the Old Man Mississippi coming down. This region in our hands going to ancient Egypt. Headquarters, Memphis, Tennessee. Memphis, the Memphite theology. Oh, that's right here. Oh, that's right here. The five great lakes. Five lakes that were man-made by our ancestors that contain half of the world's fresh water supply. And that whole region over there is known as the breadbasket of the world. We fed the whole planet from there. And the elders also say that the original Mecca was Chicago, the center of all food, wheat, grain and livestock distribution for the planet. And until this day, it's still that way. So we got to realize where we're standing at right now and who we really are. When those Moors seen that we were falling from power, they took certain Europeans and initiated them and made them Mystic Turks, chief protectors of the sacred shrines. They're not the owners. You have to be a master mason in the federal government. And they were, their duty was, when we seen that we were falling, we said, well, and they were coming to power, we said, let's share the group with them and put them there to protect our sacred shrine from the Catholics who would have destroyed everything up in here. And look at the Kennedy who was killed. What was he? Catholic. There'd be no Catholic and be up in our sacred shrine. You know, religious mystery. We deal with science and mathematics from 0 to 9, zodiac and geometry, minus religious superstition. We don't get into that. We deal with universal science. They're waiting for you to come and claim what's rightfully yours. We're sitting back. I'm a Negro. I'm a color. I'm a black. I'm out. When you come along with that, they say, look, go back and study some more. Come back when you're ready. Because this was given to me by Moore. The title of this says Moore. If you don't come correct, you're not getting nothing. And the FBI, I got a picture of Cuba. Let's just get this picture out here. So you're going to see, I'm getting a little bit to the other left here, but I just want you to see this. If I can find it. And here you see a picture. There's so much information, you know. I just wish people could see. I did about 20,000 hours of research over the last 12 years. And I've seen things. I'm just trying to get it to people so everybody else can see what I've seen. But I've seen some stuff that you would be surprised. I can't find it right this second, but I would have showed you. But it's a picture of J. Edgar Hoover with the federal government. You know, for many decades, for all intents and purposes, he was the federal government. The elders mentioned that there was a Moore up in Cleveland, I think, who was mentioning this Moore's teachings with black nationalism. And I heard that the FBI stepped to the brother and said, listen, it was your fathers who put us in place to protect us when y'all fell from power. And we will kill anybody or deal with anybody who has been overthrown. I don't care if they call us white, mafia, whatever. But you better talk to that brother. So we got to understand what we deal with here and who we really are. They know when they see you with this on your head, believe me, they know that you know who you are. And they respect you properly for that. You'd be surprised at the response you get. And it's not even about that. It's about uplifting ourselves and returning ourselves to the right place so we get the planet back on track. Like I said, when the Castaway, the mice will play, that's what's been going on. While we've been sleeping, this beast's been ruining our planet. forced everybody to get immunizations for measles. You couldn't attend college. When I walked into Tampa for the fourth semester, they had a list of everybody's name who didn't get shots, saying you cannot come on here if you didn't get a shot. I said, what? Now they forced the people. Now all of a sudden there's a massive outbreak of measles on the college campuses, a state of emergency. Now this is a coincidence. You just did vaccinations, and now all of a sudden there's an outbreak? And then all the kids are talking about, I'm going to get my vaccination shot. Cattle being led to the slaughterhouse and don't realize it. You know, terms of gang warfare and all the different things is going on. For instance, Clinton just recently said that they're going to pass a bill. They want to pass a bill giving the police the right to go up into public house without such a house with no warrant, nothing, because of what's happening in Chicago. Think about that for a minute. You're talking about police. And the thing about it, we are calling for the police state. They don't. They can't call. We say, man, crime is too much in my neighborhood. Oh, man, I'll give up the right of privacy for the right to live. You are calling for a police state. And they say, I will oblige you. We'll give it to you. That's what you want. You know, so we got to wait. Things is happening. So many things is happening. Now, they passed so many laws, this, that, this, the state. We got to declare independence from the state society and build our stuff. I'm going to get into that more towards the end. Let me just continue on. And this book just gets into all types of artifacts, hieroglyphics that were part of, as a matter of fact, show you how this is one world of our empire. The recent edition of Nexus Magazine has an article in here that deals with this mystery rock carvings, proof of Atlantis. And it shows you in Australia, they found hieroglyphics in Australia, straight up hieroglyphics, cartouches and all. We had a vast global network and the technology was advanced. Here's a picture of model airplanes that were found in Central America. Aerodynamically built, look like modern airplanes. We was dealing with space flight the whole night. None of these things was new to us. I have a videotape here, the Space and Pyramids on Mars. And what they did, this was an electric grid inside the United Nations. There's a whole complex they found up there with numerous structures. When they measured the angles of those and the measurements of those that complex up there, they gave key formulas of physics and geometry. And they matched up with the megalithic structures we built down here, the pyramids, Stonehenge, so on and so forth. So this was all one technology we was dealing with. Ain't nothing new under the sun. We was dealing with all these things that we think is new now. We always had knowledge of these things. Let me just read you this part here. Oh, and also to show you something else, showing you the discrepancy with regards to chronology, there's a whole section of books from the Bible, whatever, that they call Apocrypha, books that was left out from the Bible. One of the books is a book called the Book of Baruch. And you begin to see why they left these books, because it contradicts a lot of what they're saying. This book, so-called, deals with Nebuchadnezzar and the so-called Babylonian captivity. But you're going to find out that when they talk about Nebuchadnezzar and the Babylonian captivity with the children of Israel, the children of Yaqub, who was really dealing with a period of time when the Moorish nation had enslaved the Europeans. We enslaved them before they enslaved us. Now, hold up. That's right. We had them enslaved on a global level for 360 years. This is why they were able to enslave us, because according to the divine law of retribution, what goes around come around. And this is why the Moorish Empire fell. And you said, wait, they declared the independence of Britain. You think they declared the independence in 1776 when they declared the independence? They declared the independence from the Moorish nation. Now, when I first asked, oh, that's crazy. What are you talking about, the Moorish nation? They're white people from England. I found a book called Diplomatic Relations with the Barbary Powers from 1776 up. And in it, it says that in 1776, Britain, France, Germany, Denmark, Italy, all these countries were paying tribute to Morocco. They were paying tribute to the Moors. You don't pay tribute unless you're a conquered nation. They were paying tribute to the Moors. And we were using them as mercenary forces. This thing is deep. Now, dealing with the Babylonian captivity of the Jews, and this is a time where they learned a lot, the children, so this is a time when they learned a lot of what they learned. Now, I'm distinguishing between the 12 tribes of Israel, which we are, and the children of Israel, or Yaqub, whose name was changed to Israel after he did his experimentation.
and they were enslaved by the Moroccan Babylonian Empire, who were Moors. And to show you how they fooled around with time, it says here, as will be shown, now this is the book of Baruch, it says, as will be shown the sequel tragic events of 586 B.C., which heralds the exile, constitute a thin historic drapery which invests the yet greater tragedy of the Jewish race in A.D. 70. It is now generally accepted by recent critics that Nebuchadnezzar and Belshazzar represent the persons of Vespasian and Titus, which is around 70 AD. So here, they're talking about something that happens, they say 586 BC, then with Nebuchadnezzar, then here they're saying it's really dealing with Vespasian and Titus. And then if you take it further, you find it's really dealing with something else. So you see the games that was being played here with chronology and geography. And see, we can't accept the chronology and geography they have given us and just be content with just saying it was black people. No, let's question the whole geography and chronology they have given us. Here's another article. This was taken from a book called The Science of the Mexican Pyramids. Now, I think Brother Emiola had the one dealing with the Egyptian pyramids. You should try also get the one with the Mexican pyramids. There was an article in it, and it shows all these Moors who heads were decapitated and put on poles and put on sticks. And check out what it says. It says, designed for the detection and punishment of heretics, the Inquisition was used as a giant pork barrel for the enrichment of crown, church, and inquisitors while cheerfully eliminating dangerous radicals. Now, listen to who these dangerous radicals are. Those who have been taught medicine, geography, rhetoric, chemistry, physics, mathematics, and astronomy by Moorish philosophers. I'm just going to put the tape in. And this decapitation was taking place in Mexico. This ain't Spain. This is in Mexico. Dates. It doesn't have a date on this particular page yet, but I'm sure it's around 1600, somewhere around that time, time of the conquistadors and so on and so forth. And it says that dangerous radicals were considered were the ones who would teach the mathematics, geography, rhetoric, all these things at that time. These are the ones who they were decapitating. It says the Inquisition was also an excuse to rid the planet of such organized mystics as Illuminati, Pantheists, Manichaeans, and Albigensians. So Moors, all these are represented all in one breath as one thing. This Inquisition was for all these so-called people. This is one example of the connection between them. And it says, all the accused were presumed guilty before trial. Now, these are so-called Christians. All the guilty were presumed guilty before they were given a trial. Find the backroom police stations. The defendant was afforded no counsel. Accuser and judge were the same person. The names of witnesses against the defendant were withheld from him. Women, children, and slaves could not be used as witnesses by the defendant, but could be used by the prosecution, who could obtain them by torture. And it says minor penalties could be commuted, paid off, bribery. We know the corruption already. And then it says, I checked it, it says, the victim's goods were subject to confiscation and were incorporated into the royal and church domains. We talk about reparations. And this is European saying where our wealth went to. It says that the victim's goods subject to confiscation, we're talking about land, gold, everything, subject to confiscation were incorporated into the royal crown and the church domains. The inquisitors who paid no taxes and gave no account of confiscation effectively took their share. As a deterrent to possible opposition in New Spain, Mexico, 34 Negroes, including four women, were hanged and decapitated in Mexico City. So as a deterrent, the Moors, Illuminati, all the stuff like this, as a deterrent, they hanged 30 Negroes and nobody else. So what does that tell you? That was us, the Moors, the Illuminati, the illuminated ones, who was teaching geography and all this. You got to
read between the lines, and they'll tell you of so many words. They can't outright tell you because they're under open obligation not to. They can't tell you who you are outright. They could never tell you that you were Moors and that you had a Moorish empire just prior to their 1776 declaration of independence. They can't tell you that. This is what's based on you not knowing that, and they maintain themselves. Here's a picture. And we think over there, they switch geography around. We think over there is England. They also thought that the original England is over here in Virginia, Jamestown, King James, Jamestown, Virginia, and that what they over there call England now, we used to call Albion or Albion. I said, what are you talking about? Then I came across a book, and it says Sir Francis Drake claimed the land of his, they're talking about California. It says that Drake claimed the land in the name of his queen, Elizabeth I. He called it Nova Albion. Nova meaning new, and Albion being an old name from England, for England. Well, it is by their own scholars that the original name of that place was Albion or Albine because the white cliffs of Dover. Albion or Albine meaning white. It was white cliffs of Dover. So all this stuff is starting to click and make sense, and the stuff that just seems so far-fetched on one hand, upon doing the research stuff, to make a lot more sense. Just show some pictures here. Because a lot of the children, a lot of the Europeans, famous Europeans you see in history or whatever, were actually the mulatto mixed breed children of Moorish nobles and rulers and white women who were in their harems. See, this is where the bleaching out took place. And people who you see in early history here in America, like John Hanson, were really, really Moors, were passing as if they were white. What happened was that white women were sold on a global level. They were sold on a global level to more towns all over the world. And a lot of mixed breed children that you've seen hanging through them, so-called semi, this is where you get the so-called Turks, Arabs, Japanese, Indians. These are mixed children of us on a global scale. Now, people say, what do you mean we had the Europeans as slaves and we were selling white women on a global scale? There's a lesson here. This is one of the lessons from the package. This is the fourth one of Big Ben Bay. And in it, like what they say, a picture's worth a thousand words, right? Here's a picture taken from Jay Rogers' book. And here you see a Moor with a fez on selling a white woman. This is crazy. A Moor with a fez on. This is one of the reasons why the Moors fell, because we did it to our own sometime also. Here you see a harem scene with white women in a Moorish harem. All right? So a picture's worth a thousand words. Now, look at some of these people here. This right here is King Philip II, Philip III, son of King Philip II. And we just talk about the lips and everything. He looked like one of our Spanish brothers or whatever. And here is a picture of King Philip II. These various rulers up in Europe. See, originally they were all so-called blackamoors, what they call blackamoors, and eventually through the bleaching out process, they became what's known as tawny Moors, or lighter skin Moors. That's where you get the whole thing about tawny Moors. Here's Alexander Farnese, Duke of Parma, the great Spanish general. All mulatto Moors. And they were more refined than the other savage Europeans because they grew up in the courts of the Moors. So they learned how to behave us, how to behave amongst us. And here's even a picture of Sir Francis Drake, so-called, bad guy, to see you too. He was a mulatto Moor, if you look carefully. I know brothers, they look just like him. Here, I have a picture here also of King John, the so-called son of the Magna Carta. And here you see, he looks just like a brother with two brothers sitting in the background. King John of England, who so-called signed the Magna Carta. This thing is so deep. I mean, so much history has been left out. Here's a picture of Vesalius, one of the great scientists dealing with anatomy and everything. And you see, he has an actual apple. So, I mean, it's no doubt he got an actual apple on this picture. And he was a founder. All these great people we've seen in Europe, mostly were the sons of Moorish rulers and European women. And then And I'm going to get into other facts you hear about the Bilderberg group and what's known as the black nobility.
Wait,
Ralph Chopper, why are Europeans so called, why Europeans call themselves black nobility?
Where did that come from?
And then you get into Jay Rogers' book, Sex and Race, and you look at the coat of arms of the nobility up in Europe, Germany, France, all these Moors. Well, let me just to prove that they were Moors. I'm using the specific word Moors. Now, I'm not saying black. I'm saying they were Moors. You know, with nationality, it says Negroes in the coat of arms of noble family. And, you know, Jay Rogers, you just got to get past the word Negro when you read his books. He got heavy information in his books. You just got to get overlooked at with the word Negro. And here's the noble families of, these are the French, Italian, Spanish, and Polish noble families. And look at the names. Valencia, Moret, Moretti, Moreau, Morest, Moors, all Moors, ruling all throughout Europe. These are the ones from Dutch and Belgian families. And look at the names again. Moreau, Moreau, Moore, straight up Moor, M-O-O-R, straight up. Moors, ruling Europe. You know, so there's a whole history. There's a whole aspect of our history. I want to read this part now, too, coming from a book. That's about to get messy now, but that's supposed to happen. this is a heavy book here, Ancient Modern Britain. If you can't get your hands a hold of this, there's two volumes. And through almost every page of these two volumes, all these talks about it more, how we were ruled by Scotland, Ireland, and all those places we were left to step up into. So those so-called marauding bands, the Gypsies, these Gypsies, some of them were like the cold war nobility, that when they were deposed from power, they became so-called marauding bands. This is why you see a group that just come down in Europe, dark skin, dirt poor with a title of nobility. When you get this title of nobility, it was a form of woman who were deposed from power. Now in this book, he mentions it here. And because, see, the whole part of our history, we don't get into all this. What about all this up here? All up in the air. Who was working this up here? All this up in here. That was all up. All our negatives all up in here. We just look at this. All this down here. All that. All this. And this is what he talks about. He mentions here, you heard about the Jewish. So-called Stonehenge. And Stonehenge, I said, wait, England is, all right.
Moors, then a
much written about the male, the men and the other women. And they talk about his name or Moravia, connected with the Moors, Moray in India, Moray or Mauritania in Africa. So the vast of this empire, the Maori, South Pacific, Moravia, Romans, it's so much. Now check this out. Now this is this is what we have. This is the Bible. This is the Bible. This is gonna put up on the Bible. This is heavy because in this he mentions Europeans landed on shore in New England in 1600 and getting into a battle with 700 Moors. And in the paragraph, he uses the word Moor and Indian interchangeably as if he's talking about the same person. Check it out. He says, in a brief narrative of the encounter between the early colonists of New England and the native Indians, I find it stated that these unfortunate gentlemen were intersected by 700 Moors, with whom they fought for the space of 4 hours, so not only they too, but Captain Sharp and 51 Christian Moors lay dead upon the place. And again, that at Woodox, 10 miles away from Sinkhunch, on the 16th of May, was a little structure between Moors and Christians, wherein there was of the latter three slain and two wounded and on two Indian killed. So you use the word Indian and Moor, and Indian Moor and it's enemy. It's right there in black and white. This is your this is not this is European writers. Then we want to know why so many Europeans.
Any civilized modern people.
horrible lightnings and dragons in the air, and flashes of fire, glancing and flying to and fro, accompanied with fire rain, that is by no means an example. These are the ordinary adjuncts of modern warfare. It was launched in artillery, modern artillery in 876 A.D. When they came for the sister, they were tearing modern artillery being launched. The dragons would kill the flying fire to and fro in the air with actually missiles being launched. That's the type of technology was there back then. They were magicians. They called us magi. We were so powerful, we had them, we had them slaves, that we made them pay us a tribute, daily tribute. This is where you get the word blackmail. The tribute that they had to pay to the Moors is called blackmail. That's what it was called. That's where you get the whole thing black. That was the tax that we put on the Europeans. So it's a whole other area of our history that we have not looked into. I'm just scratching the surface right now. There's so much more to it. There's so much more to it. And what I want to do is just touch on a couple of miscellaneous things. Just to show you also, this new development is coming out every time. This last class, the course that I taught, we graduated over a dozen students. And what's been happening is that they were from all walks of life. Some were Masons, some were Hebrew Israelites, some were this, some were that. And once they got the contact, now they all coming, they're constantly bringing new material every day, new things that they're finding. I just brought this the other week. And Civil War magazine, right? And on the inside here, and I have this up in the front, you can look, check it, take a picture, look at it. They have a picture of a battle that took place during the Civil War. And when you look at what's on the heads of the fighters, you see blue and red feathers. Clear as day, blue and red feathers on their heads. And I got the other magazine. And they have a picture here of another person fighting the Civil War. You see what's on his head. It says this is in this hemisphere. Now, these particular units or regiments was what was known as Zouave troops. I mean, what is that about? What's Zouave troops fighting the Civil War? These Zouave troops were so-called Algerians. Now, what did Algerians do fighting over here in North America? Algerians, feathers and all. Zouave, this is where they got the word suave or suave. From the word Zouave, they were known as some of the most fierce fighters in this war. They were just known as being fearless. They were, this is where they talk about where they didn't like their guns. They just threw down their guns and just attacked with knives. They were just fearless. I mean, just know that it was the Zouave troop used to fear. You know what I'm saying? So we just got this information. Now we're looking deeper into that aspect of it. And then I come and came across something else. And this bugged me out. This is something brief, but it just bugged me out. And I got this from Nexus magazine. And then they did a series called The History of Banks, History of Banking. And it wasn't even, the article was not even about this. It's not even about what I'm about to read. He just said this in passing. And the way he said it was as if, like, you know, I don't even have to justify this. I don't have to prove this. This is just known. Check out what he said. He said, it was a human cry in the newspapers of the Northeast banking interest to execute the president of the bankers' Confederate States of America in the South. For 2 years, president of the South was kept in a dark, wet, cold cell in the side of an earthen bank at Fortress Monroe. He was an ill and broken man when put there. He should have died and was expected to die. When it was apparent that there was no way to ravage and occupy South, parentheses, which was ruled by blacks, could ever revolt, he was released. Oh, wait, hold up. He just threw that in there. In parentheses, he just says, South, which was ruled by blacks. I said, he didn't even try and prove it or nothing. He just said it's like, this is just common knowledge. And I've seen it mentioned in other books, talking about carpetbaggers, talking about how the South was ruled by black people. So someone else, see, what happened was that we had a plantation system already here, the Moors set up over here, where we had Europeans on it. And what happened was that they just took over the slaves that we already had, they just reversed it. And we became the slaves, the prisoners of war and the slaves. Well, they just took over what was already established. This is why a lot of the ones who already managed the planet just became overseers. doing what they've always been doing, but now they're giving the fruits of their labor to the Europeans because they were defeated in particular wars or battles. All right? And it was something else that I wanted to call. Here, in this lesson also, I have a series of pictures in here. And this is a motif, and they constantly did this. They constantly show pictures of famous European generals, the leaders or whatever, up front. And in the background, you see a little more in the background. As if he's got some little servant or something like that. In reality, the European you see up in the front was the student of that little more you see in the background who they portraying as a little servant. This was a motif, but they could not reveal who it was that was teaching them this thing. Because our heads would have been taken by the sword for teaching it to them. But we put them on the sword and told them not to reveal the secret. So you see, here's a picture of Peter the Great. See him more in the background, looking over his shoulder. That's the teacher. This is a student up front here. And you see another picture here of George Washington. You can't see it from now. I don't think you see it, but I'm just going to show you. The family of George Washington. And here over in the corner, you see a brother back here. In the corner, in the shadow, back in the corner. The brother back there. Here's a picture of George Washington, and here's Prince Whipple in the back with a turban, and a feather on a turban. Now, check this picture out. Here's Prince Whipple, and back of him with a turban on. I just want to show you a picture. Here's a picture of Noble Joe Ali with a turban with a feather in it. And here's a picture, and they look almost similar. Prince Whipple with a turban and a feather. And it was said that what? George Washington chopped down a cherry tree, which was dealing with the Moorish flag and the Moorish fez, and put it into a conservatory and hid it there. And who was that reclaimed it? Noble Drew Ali. So isn't it a strange coincidence? Isn't that Noble Drew Ali looking over his shoulder, saying, I'm seeing what you did, but I'm going to come back at a later date and reclaim it. You know, and what is it? The Moorish flag is reincarnation, right? Here it goes right here. It's right there. Here's another picture of General Lafayette. And here's the Moor in the back here. So wait a minute. Why is all these pictures of these strange white people and the Moor in the background? There's something deeper to this. You know what I'm saying? You see, and here's a picture of John Trumbull, Lieutenant Governor, and his Negro serving in the back. And you see the same motif throughout. This is a motif where those who know understood that, and back then, that was his teacher. Who was teaching that European that was in front. And were, now some people say Ben Day, some more, who told them they traitors. Why they did that? They're not traitors. Those were the Moors who stood for the true principles of what the Moor civilization was about, and they rebelled against the Moor Empire, which had got corrupt and began to enslave people, and the rulers of Sultans got greedy and began against the people Islamism. Which was religious mystery and spook God worship. Instead of giving them the signs of mathematics up 0 to 9, though they're in Germany, that was hidden. And that was considered like taboo. That was because it was the religious mystery part, because they understood that religion is a form of mass control or low control of the empire, and that corrupt, hid the truth from the people, and began to enslave the people. So then you had a series of Moors who stood for the truth of what the Moors Empire was about, and they said, well, you know what we're going to do? We're going to use the Europeans as a tool to overthrow the wicked Moorish Empire. This is a see, our answer was a long time ago that will come to fruition at a later date. Them documents used to the Europeans, that was given to them. All that knowledge was given to them. There's a lesson in here that deals with Big Ben Bay, where they talk about this mystery man that shows up at the time of Declaration of Independence. They said it's not a Declaration of Independence, an Independence Hall, whatever. They had the door locked, all that downstairs, everything. So they go over there, up there, arguing, you know, they're scared. They're really scared to declare their independence. We got killed and all this stuff like that, you know, and they work. I think that's one time where they say, we don't hang along, something like that. Anyway, they question whether or not they're going to sign this document. The document said they're like, we got to get her. All of a sudden, a man stands up. How do you get in there? And he says, sign that document. And then he goes for a long list of why they should sign that document. And when he finished, all the way to the table, he signed the Declaration of Independence. When he turned around, the man was gone.
And all through the history of the United States, you will always see these mystery people who are behind the scenes doing certain things, and the white people are front, taking the credit for it. The Declaration of Independence, those things were put together. That's for us to use now. That when we step up to the U.S. society, that we declare independence from you, and say, well, what right do you have to declare independence? You did the same thing back then. In the list of abuses that you gave to justify you declaring it, we got a list 10 times longer than that to justify our claims. And if what we are doing now is invalid, then what you did back then is invalid. So we got to know how to use the same document that they use. We need the same thing to do what we got to do this time, because when our ancestors put the thing together, they really put it together for us in this day and time. And this is why they were told to sign that thing, because my descendants in the future will be able to use that.
Certain words, certain prayers, certain words of power that you say to plants to get the most potency out from.
enough that you need. But I told him, I said that that same tree or plant can be used for many generations so that my children know that when they get a headache, they go to this little tree. When their children told me, they all know that when I get, I just call my back and go to that tree. This is how we, this is the relationship that we had, and the plant gave, it took care of us because it said, look, I'm going to give to you because I know you're going to preserve me. You need me, so I'm going to work with you. This, see, this is what we got to get back into. This, we got to evolve and develop technology. We see, we're being called upon the world today. We had 144,000. We got to realize who we are, reclaim our nationality, and realize who we are, deal with more signs. More signs accomplishes everything. You could deal with every sign, any sign, and that's more signs. And the more, there's no such thing as, nah, brother, we don't deal with that. Now, dogmatic type of approach. Nah, this is the signs to everything in life. Everything in life. And it's important to get in tune with nature because it will save your life. You will know what's going to happen, when it's going to happen, what you should do to save yourself from that. And I'm just letting myself, but I'm into it. I mean, my car, I got my machete down underneath that. I got my shovel. I got my eye. I got everything in there. I'm going up, going to work. It's like country. I go out there. I just get into it. I just love it. I spend sometimes a whole day. And you just, I can't even describe. You just got to experience it. This is what we want to work on in terms of getting land, building retreats, just having things where we go out there. Just, man, it'll cleanse you. It'll help you overcome all your problems. It'll recenter you, refocus you. Sometimes you got to step outside of your situation to understand your situation. Sometimes I'm in the woods, and I'm like 1,000 feet high, and I see New York City just like this. I'm looking at it. I say, boom. Here I am. I'm in there. I got children. I'm doing this and that. I can see what's going on. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes when you're in it, you can't see the forest for the trees. You got to step outside of it so you can say, boom, this is what's happening. And then when you go back in it, you're more better prepared to deal with it. You see, we called upon, we got to develop a technology that's in harmony with nature, that doesn't destroy it, but that's balanced with it. This society's out of balance. Technology's all up here and spotty down here. The highest crime rate, places like New York, you got more people killed in 1 year that's killed in these different wars that's happening in the Middle East and all this stuff like that. And there's no stated declaration of war. But more of us are dying in these cities. So we got to wake up and realize what's going on. Time is for short. You know, those of us, I'm content with just a simple way of life. Things I enjoy don't cost money. They don't cost money for me to go in the woods and meditate with my children there and let them explore and enjoy it. It don't cost money to do those things. I'm content with that way of life. And everything else is extra. The city, all the stuff will fall apart. I'll be content with that. Return back to nature. Return back to square one. So once we know that will be your insurance so that anything that may happen, you will be prepared to deal with. It's not okay. We're able to do because of certain things that we did. That sort of set us up for it because, like I said, what goes around come around. Certain divine energies wasn't working for us. This is why they were able just to march in and do certain things. And our divine talismans and sacred things just wasn't working the way it used to work. Because we had this certain things that deprived it of our power, deprived us of our power, and this set us up for them to be able to do what they were able to do. Certain things. We can return to conqueror. In other words, they rose up. We had them in slavery. And, you know, I don't get into people about how slavery is working out. Slavery. I don't get to which is worse. We had certain dungeons, certain places, and Britain, so we had them in dungeons, chained down in there. We sold those women sock naked in chains to different hounds. So I'm not going to get a capacity of which is worse and better. We have to recognize that, you know, you can't overcome, you cannot evolve yourself until you recognize the mistakes that you have made and overcome that. You see what I'm saying? So this is also important for us to understand so that we won't make the same mistake over again. You see what I'm saying? So they say those who don't know this is doing it repeated. You see what I'm saying? So this is why they were able to do what they was able to do. It was almost like a chess game on a global scale in regards to the crusades and the fight between the so-called Muslims and Christians. On this side of the board, you had king, queen, castle, books or whatever you rank and file. On this side, you have king and queen. Christianity, you know, this was the whole chess thing really about. And then you notice, now we were the most powerful at that time. We let y'all make the first move. And you see, a chess fight always makes the first move. Now, we had them in hand, but then the tables were turned. And the situation that we had them in,
They now have us in that situation. This is why some of the things that they did to get themselves out of, we find ourselves now doing. And in regards to the first question, the significance of more is the Moorish is the dispensation of civilization. All these other things are different sub nationalities. So you got Washita Moors, you got Seminole Moors, you got Ethiopian Moors, you got so-and-so Moors. These are sub nationalities, but the whole picture in terms of civilization was more. The word more did not originate with Greeks. I mean, white people, as people may think that white Greeks or white Romans, something like that, because first of all, the language Latin came from originating with us, first of all, in terms of looking at Latin terminology. And second of all, more, the word more came from the last high priest of the Moabite civilization, Mor Luwakanil, who gave the technology and everything, the knowledge from the previous civilization, Mor Atlantis, to his son, Yaqub or Jacob. And then they perfected the signs of mathematics from 0 to 9, which they could call Arabic numerals, zodiac, and geometry. And then we set out to re-educate the rest of the human family to the Earth to the civilization. And being that we were navigators, we were the main dispersers of civilization on the planet. And we came in contact with the best that each civilization had to offer and do the best for ourselves. This is why more can never be now-minded and dogmatic and say you want to do it this way or that way. You see what I'm saying? We studied this time, and we draw the best spot for ourselves.
The intellectual representative, you need to get this book on James Church for.
Sign the symbol.
God be forces of you. This is one on James Church for, who also is compiled in the midst of the negative community by Peter Dawkins. It is the James Church for particular words on music.
Oh, you
know more.
That you just brought that up. In that very same book, it speaks about a man by the name of Augustus Latronjian, who wrote a book called Queen Mu and the Egyptian Sphinx. And his whole theory was that the civilization was born from this hemisphere and then brought abroad. The reverse of what they were putting forth at that time, and he was captivated for that. And then up in New York City, I went to look for that book. There was only one library that had that book in City College, and I went there to go get that book, and sure enough, it was missing. It was missing. It was lost, stolen. They done pulled it off, and as we start to get more of this information, they're going to begin pulling more of this stuff off. This is why it's important for us to preserve what we can.
I have a question. When you were talking about the decapitation in Mexico,
right,
you get a reference of Luan and Luminati, like they were one in the same, but it's like
every dad,
the
Luminati. I know.
They
have to, what I'm going to do, the next lecture I'm going to do, I'm going to get into the connection between Moors, Illuminati, and the New World Order. And I don't have all my materials here on that subject right now. So, the original Illuminati or Illuminated ones are our ascended masters, our people. You see what I'm saying? But there's certain things that took place that we got a different twist on things, you know what I'm saying? And what I want to do, when I bring out the information, I'm going to put a different spin on things, even things that you know throughout the Federal Reserve, so on and so forth. There may be even a deeper aspect to all that.
Right.
But ultimately goes back to, I don't really want to get to it. I don't have my materials now, you know what I'm saying? I don't want to open a can of worms. I can't prove it with different things right now, but I'm going to say that for the next lecture. Just by showing hands, how many people would like to attend or would attend that lecture? I want to know if people are interested. All right, well, then the next one I'll do, hoping the most time will be on that particular subject. All right. Any other one?
From a time aspect, a lot of nation rights said we need to do this before they pull this and that. Well, what kind of time are we looking at before we have to get our own act?
What I suggest that we need to do is, in the more, you know, we have, in New York City, we have a structure, and that's like the last lesson of the lesson here, when we get into the structure of our government and so on and so forth. And what we need to do is reclaim our Moorish nationality. See, you ask somebody, what's your nationality? African. There's no nationality for African. Africa is a continent made of many nationalities, many nations. There's no nationality called African, Afro-American. Afro's a hairstyle. Your nationality is Afro-American. We got to be clear about this because when you look in the Black Law Dictionary,
Nationality means your political and legal status. If you don't know that, you're not sure, if you don't really know what your political status is, then anybody can do anything they want with you. You have no real legal status. You see what I'm saying? Nationality is key. With your nationality comes certain inherited birthrights, namely self-determination, the right to govern yourself. The different states, you have the federal government, you have the U.S. society. The original federal government was designed by our forefathers. It was taken over, and the de facto federal government was set up by the Union State Society. The different states were set up by the white people united and took it over, set up a de facto government. The different states, the several states of the Union, were all their constitution. They have their own constitution, were based on the Magna Carta, which is a Christian code of conduct, based on their particular custom for common law, custom practices and usages. We need to come together, put together a governmental structure and staff it. Have brothers and try. This is what we strive to do in New York City. I'm the head of the Department of Education. We have another brother that we put in the head of the Department of Transportation for ourselves, our own court system, and so on and so forth. So therefore, we will step to the U.S. side and say, look, when we reclaim our nationality, we have thereby declared our independence from you, the U.S. society. And we are now governing ourselves according to our common law, custom, practices, and usages. You have no jurisdiction over us. In any court of law, before a court of law can proceed, it has to establish jurisdiction over the person or subject matter. If you establish the jurisdiction over the person or matter, it cannot legally proceed. It cannot arbitrarily assume jurisdiction over you. You have clear proof. You have your own constitution, your own nationality, stating clearly who you are. You see what I'm saying? So what we need to do is, and it's not for everybody. You know, the masses is not going to have the masses wait to a crisis situation before they respond and do anything. So this is why you always hear about this, about 144,000, the first fruits. There's always a group of first fruits, a select few, that was, and actually staff of government. You don't need a mass of the people. You staff it first, you establish your courses, and you saw your three branches. It was perfected by Ben Bay. Executive, judiciary, legislative, and you staff different offices, and you then now get together the most eloquent speakers or whatever, and then you step to the you say, as you say, I'm not asking you, to recognize me. I'm just out of courage. I'm just informing you of the facts. In law, they have what's known as the compact theory of law, which states, and that's in the 11th lesson here, is the 11th lesson of the course. I found the jewel of the book. This particular book got into the origins of the states that we call the different colonies, and how they went from the guild system to the franchise corporate type of structure, like the West Indies companies, all that stuff like that, and then into the Commonwealth, and then from the Commonwealth into the states. So they grew right out of a franchise, right out of a franchise. And what it was a group. See, in the compact theory of law says that when a free and sovereign individuals come together and decide to collectively govern themselves by reason of their mutual agreement, that government is valid. That's the compact theory of law. That's what they did on the Mayflower. The Mayflower Compact. They agreed amongst themselves before they set foot on land. They said that when we get there, we will collectively govern ourselves. And that became what's known as the state of Massachusetts. So here we go again. Therefore, when we claim to govern ourselves and our government, they say, well, that's invalid. Well, half your states is invalid there because y'all did it all based on the same thing. See, we got to know how to use what they're using against them. You see what I'm saying? So what we need to do is form a government, staff it, and begin to function that stuff, irregardless of whether or not they want to recognize it or what. Recognize on a global level. If they don't recognize, there's other nations in the world that will recognize. You see what I'm saying? And then from that point on, more people begin to get attracted when they see what's going with you. Then we can begin to claim our land and do certain things.
Right. That try to control every aspect of your life through a priesthood.
But really, the goal of our ancestors was to give you the proper tools and the universal sciences that you need, and then you go out and navigate the course of your own life because you are more, you're a navigator. And I'm so busy navigating my ship, I ain't got time to navigate your ship. So let me give you the tools of navigation, the tools that you need to navigate the course of life, and you go on and navigate the course of your own life. And that was the ultimate goal. So what we were supposed to learn was that we were not supposed to get involved with enslaving anybody, hiding knowledge, hiding the truth from people so that you can enslave them and exploit them. We wasn't like to break our stuff into different religious factions based on various religious dogma and religious mystery of different varieties. That we were to deal with universal science and principles and establish a sound relationship with nature and the earth. That was the goal, and that was what we were supposed to learn. That White House that was set up by this day in terms of universal principles and science of government was supposed to be the true United Nations, where the people of the planet were supposed to be guided and represented and guided by the true signs. And our structure of our government, we had what's known as the Hoodwatchah Rouge, or the Star Zodiac Chamber. That was supposed to be a part of Washington, D.C., where certain calculations were made in regards to the sun, moon, and stars, and the different cycles. And then our laws are based on those divine laws, not man-made codes, laws, and statutes. You see what I'm saying? But that has been left out. That's why, in the fact that you see the pyramid, the cap is separated. The body pyramid symbolizes the mass of the people, and the cap symbolizes the illuminated or the illuminated ones who know the truth, but that truth is separated from the masses, and this is why you got the state of affairs on a global level like you see now. So our job is to come together amongst ourselves, govern ourselves by universal moral science, the universal principles, and then set the example and re-educate the rest of the human family, Earth, human family planet Earth, the 144,000, because 144 is 12 square. Which means what? We are squared off the rest of the planet with the 12 signs of the zodiac, mathematics and geometry. And then you look at the layout of the New City of Jerusalem, and all the measurements brought down to 12, shows you that the number 12 is the key to the New World Order and the signs of the zodiac, if you properly understand it. Even though it's been commercialized, you understand that's fine. It will show you the profession of government and society. Everything, economics, everything should be based on that zodiac, which we trivialize, but we don't know what we're dealing with. So that was the ultimate goal of our forefathers. Now, let me say one thing, because, this is a vast topic. You know, the course that I taught was 12 sessions, and that was just laying a basic foundation. So I know at least, a couple hours here, you're not going to get the full content, but I'll try my best. But,
the main irony for me is that basically, I've heard you say before that, like, presidents, they're all like, masturbation, but what you're saying is that they hold the
down, but they don't fully understand what they have. They transmit them, they preserve them, they protect them, but don't fully understand what they have. It's like, you can have something, but don't, if you don't know how to really truly utilize it, it's no good to you. You know what I'm saying? I could live in a house, and in that house could be a gold mine. But if I'm not conscious, I don't know how to dig it out and get it and utilize it, then it's really of no good to me. So they have certain things, they transmit certain things, they preserve certain things, but don't fully understand what they do have. We have the key. We have the solution to it. They'll hit you with certain jewels. They'll give you certain things. I had some professors in colleges, hit me up with this.
Check this out. It's not
really that simple. It's not that simple. Anybody can throw a fez up on his head. But like the elders always taught us, sincerity is everything. If you sincere in this and you will exude it, people will just pick up on it. I've been simple since I didn't have the fez on. But they were able to pick up certain things, and based on that, with them, so it's more just the fez. The
to have his size. Like I said, it's not that simple. It's not that simple. They're not gonna sit back and say he has a fez on his head, so he's okay. And right. So to agree, like I said, it's not always that simple, but it will treat you like a friend. Like when I was doing my whole thing with the task with the board education, you know what I'm saying? And you know what? Represent myself, they begin to treat me different. I mean, it was almost.
There is bitter land. Watered with my soul, the fruit it bears leaves me so cold. This bitter.
President, whoever in control of the society, tell him stop riding me, stop driving us into a suicidal ideology, trying to feed my seeds, getting high in weed, study my degrees, stay fly, getting paper, with some dead white people faces in a circle of spaces around the green, I'm a lean, taking perks, it's a bit of earth, it's a nigga cursed in my bless, see what I mean, it's a test, life is a test, life is like a hood, hard, trying not to fall between the cracks. And the cracks are so dark. And the dark seems more appealing than the light in the land where you gotta fight, catch a body in the night. We need a plan to survive the land, survive the storm when it comes through. Either you're busy living or busy dying. Look what it's come to. Look what it's come to. So what you gonna do?
Greetings, guys. Greetings, greetings, Royal Day. Thank you guys for tuning in to Enhancing Awareness Radio. I'm lounging on the couch, y'all, so I'm trying to find the startup clip. All right, guys, here we go.
Enhance your mind. Recharge your spirit. Awaken your soul. Enhancing Awareness Radio. Enhancing awareness with clarity.
All right, y'all. All right. Peace, 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 you guys. Thank you guys for tuning in to another broadcast of Enhancing Awareness Radio. I'm your host, Haru. And as you guys know, we are always here every weekend for the Motivational Classroom every Saturday here at Enhancing Awareness Radio, 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central. Also, guys, we are on Sunday, Spiritual Soul Sunday. It's more of a laid-back, kind of reflective, what's on your soul, heart stream, you know, kind of thing. But each weekend, guys, is a classroom. Enhancing Awareness Radio is a big classroom, so that we can learn from each other, grow together, you know, in this thing that we call life. You know what I mean? So it's about, you know, as Eternal said in a post just yesterday, I think, he was like, you know, in communion with one another, you know, we're supposed to be pouring into one another. And that's just not, you know, just relationship as far as, you know, like just to say a husband and wife or lover and friend or stuff like that. This is all partnerships. You know what I'm saying? All partnerships should be, you know, about, you know, what are we adding to one another? How are we enhancing one another's growth? You know what I mean? So shout out to the energy space. Guys, thank you, guys. We have not started off a podcast with 2 hours, right? But I think that this may go on into a series, but I wanted to cut the clip because I wanted to use the last hour so we can really talk, because this is very important. Eternal always speaks about time is up. You know, what do we mean by time's up? You know, I want him to explain to us, you know, what it means when he says time's up and why is it important. The clip was about going back and to kind of understand where what happened and where we were in order to, you know, where we're at now, in order to get us to where we're at now, and then to possibly see and project, but, you know, where we may be headed and the reasoning, you know, why time's up. So without further ado, let's go ahead and bring in Eternal peace and gratitude to the energy and to yourself. How are you feeling this royal day?
Greetings, greetings, and well, how are you?
Today I'm reflective today. I'm reflective, in a reflective mode, just reflecting.
powerful. Time is up. Time has been up, you know. It's like we've been looking at time to be our ways to express ourselves or become a part of something that really, it's an illusion. We have to become overcoming of these illusions that we keep putting in front of our external ways of thinking. You know, first is your internal way. You have to look at internal. It becomes more easier to accept the unacceptable even. So if you're into thinking at least that first, right, the internal, then to where eternal, really that's what end up being a life can be for eternity. There's the external, you know, after eternal, not me per se. I'm looking at what the word is. We use words for what we call nomenclature, just like for myself, I decided to become eternal, E-T-U-R-N-A-L, not E-T-E-R-N-A-L. It's to become something else that I already was from. So it's like an apple or the tree or the root or the earth. It's basically giving origin to an origin. And so everyone has a way to give themselves origin. When you come into knowledge of yourself, you're first going to say your mother gave you a name. You're going to live off that name because your mother said that's your name. Then after a while, you say that's your name, you're going to find into yourself a name for yourself. Respect. How you feel? So this is changed to it's become a point where the solstice become a solstice point, a solidified way of your meaning, your interpretation, your higher standards, would make you a higher standard to yourself. You know, you do have a purpose to life, you know, and if it's artificial, it'll end up becoming more why it ends up being artificial to yourself. So it's just, what do you do for yourself, you know, in the time of saying time is up? And then you realize it's not even enough work. Or you did not enough work, and you're like, man, I need to start doing some work. A contrast to itself. What has us put our purpose out, you know? And it becomes a point saying it's not your duty anymore if you don't realize it. If you've just been doing it at work, you know, or just as a job, you get off at a certain time, and then when you get off at a certain time, do you get back on?
Mm-hmm.
Do you take your shirt off and say, now this is my time off? Or do you say, this is purpose, confirmation? Yeah, I'm great. My shelf fell down. It's that confirmation inside of self. What are you looking at to say, would you take time to see yourself? Would you not take time? If you look at the word time, you mean balance. A lot of people put time into something, but is it the right time to do it? When you find out, you'll know. You'll know how powerful you are when it comes to it, too. You'll see that you're not at a point of being. Yes, with the left and the right not going in one of them, then all of a sudden it's close. If it's not meant for you, then that's why you didn't have a flow to it. Yeah, eventually,
so eternal.
You will come. Yeah.
So what I hear you saying is time's up, right? So as far as the time construct, as far as what we knew time to be, all of that whole construction, all of that, time is truly up. You follow me?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
Is that what you
got
mean skills. By it?
Yes, you have skills. You have so many skills. You don't have just one skill. You got numerous amounts. So when we put into our time, not realizing what is it that we're losing out of time, like let's say, for instance, it's the New Year's. Is it already? How is it a new year? What, because it's a new month or because they say it's a new year?
Because they say it so.
Yeah, and now everybody goes.
Your grandfather.
Even though that might not be
grandfather
the way.
Said it is.
Say it again.
I said, because Grandfather Chrono said it is.
Right. Now the man go with the man. Now the sheep go with the clothing. Not knowing the wolf in the clothing of the sheep.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it a point where you're using the industrial or you become an industrious to who you are. Some of us haven't gotten to that point, so we're industrious yet. Yeah, if you look at how to make the industrious movement, everybody that sees that will help that industrial side of people. That's why we have the I can't see what's going on, and I'm living on the victimized way. You don't really want to live on the victimized way in the first place. It's going to make you end up saying, who's the bully eventually? And now you start bullying everybody because you want things to be done your way.
Mm-hmm.
And
yep.
There's the contrast to it, you know? There's the path, right?
There's the sympathy
mm-hmm.
path, what would you call it, sympath. And then there's the empath, which, of course, in your mental, you learn your empath. In the spiritual, that spiritual outlook, you know your path and your wave of it. You got to step back out of it for a second, then come back into it and say, okay, now I got it. I might not have known it the same way. So I might have to step back just to figure out who I am. What am I doing? Is this the purpose of my life? Am I living my life? Do I feel like this is artificial? Do I get up every day and just keep punching this clock? I don't feel like I need to punch the clock this day. Do I get mad because I'm punching the clock? Do I feel all right if I punch the clock? Maybe, matter of fact, do I have to punch the clock? Sounds so harsh. You get to a point where you say, okay, just like I'm stuck into every day, the mundane, it's the month, it's the end of the year, I'm going into the end of the year, and now I want to say, Happy New Year. Wait a minute. Do you know it's a Happy New Year yet?
Mm-hmm.
Can you go into
You're
March
and
say that's a Happy New Year? That might mess your mind. You might say, dang, I might be off the track of everybody else is saying Happy New Year. And I might be saying, I'm not going to shoot my gun off because it's saying Happy New Year. And I might be saying, I'm not going to drink because they're saying it's Happy New Year. And I might be saying, I'm not going to the club and spend my money and put all these fancy clothes on me because it's a Happy New Year, even though it's not.
Exactly.
Some of us are celebrating the wrong day. And some of us are celebrating the wrong days for the certain people that don't want you to celebrate the days. I'm not saying they don't want you to celebrate the day. You can celebrate any day you would like. I'm just saying they're giving you a point of it could be foolish to celebrate this day while they're celebrating the same day, only to demise you while you're saying, hey, Happy New Year to you. Yeah, oh, yeah, Happy New Year to you. How about solicit change? Do you even know what solicit change is? Maybe this is why we don't care. And solstice as solstice, you know, it's just a way to speak it out differently. We all got different languages and cooperation we'll speak off. Yet this will explain a different way of saying, what is that? Let me get more formative with what you're speaking about. Because we do have a way to speak out verbiage without having to say, you confuse me. If it's intelligence, we wouldn't say, you confuse me. If we were intelligent versus smart, we'd just say, oh, you just duplicated me. Now, we can duplicate each other all day. However, duplication, that's camouflage. That's mimicry. We'll have an extra part to that. That's like saying you saw the path, you walked with some empath, but then some path, you just didn't know your sympathy. So now it just cut off right there, and you just kept still bumping into trees and all kind of stuff. One of your senses is still off. You just got up, you start to crawl, and now you want to walk. Don't walk yet. Just keep crawling because you haven't got it yet. You're on your way, though. There's this time that I actually laid down and got up, and in the time I laid down, I realized I could fly when I got up. Do you ever get those kind of memories, or is there, like, it might be variations. I don't know. You ever had those kind of, like,
it was hard to hear you. It was hard to hear you. I had to take you off speaker. You said, repeat that last part.
No, I was saying, have you ever been flying in your dream and realized, you know, you remembered it?
Mm-hmm. But not only in my dream, but meditation as well.
Okay, so do you remember how you did it?
I do. Well, in the meditation, I do remember exactly how I did it. The dream, though.
Yeah, it was like just as strong as the meditation for some reason. Like when I got up, I felt like I instantly still there. Like I didn't even lose it. Like what? It's like some kind of like. This is a series called Lock and Key.
No.
And Lock and Key. Lock and Key has a series of like where they basically this family, they had an expert in the room who learned how to make keys, and the keys were made mm-hmm. out of something that came from out of the world, right? I mean, off the world, into the world, into the dimension, right? Under a cave type level. Mm-hmm. And it ended up being energy to help them create these keys. The keys were magical. At the same time, it was illustrated to go in the body of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so what they did was they opened doors or doors outside. Yeah, portals, which we call portals mm-hmm. dimensions. It became that open realm that they were familiar with and became basically the magicians of that society. Now, a lot of people said that, you know, some crazy things had happened or whatever, but they really didn't know too much of what happened in that house. Respect, brother. And it was at a point where you can feel that this is a familiar tune because we, as a people, we have keys to ourselves. And just like chi is the first key, is basically like Loki, the actual Thor, and key, Asgard, you're going to Asgard, as what they'll call God, as God, before it became God. So the word God is different for a lot of people. We say God in a different way. So now, if you look at it, what's man's best friend?
Good, the dog, God, so backwards.
Okay, the dog, so dog, God, backwards. So now we say dog, God. Now you're dogging God, but you're dogging your manhood. So your manhood represents the low part of the man. They call it the hood. So this is the hood, the same thing on a car. You feel with me? So
yeah,
now they made it like a hood to a bumper. A hood
mm-hmm.
to a bumper. So a hood to a bumper, like Rumpelstiltskin. So the words that we've been seeing are words that we've been still replaying in our mind and giving to our children. And you're like, oh, I'm going to pervert my child. So we're perverting our child to fairy tales, this nursery rhyme, this Robert Fitzgerald. And then we say, you have a domesticated fight on Friday night, whatever night, alcohol night, the night you didn't want to fight, right? And so that fight mm-hmm. ended up being a fright night. A fight and a fright night. So fight, flight and how you fight basically is like a neophyte. When people learn knowledge, they first learn it from a first-hand base, right?
Mm-hmm.
Once they get into it, then they say, okay, I absorb it. But now I use it because I just got this first knowledge or whatever. You know what I mean? So I got to test it out on somebody. So that's
right.
why the wimp becomes a bully and the bully becomes a wimp. When we find out who's fighting who, you're really fighting yourself.
Mm-hmm.
So this is that point of the matrix aspect. We run into the matrix of saying, okay, time up. I got to realize maybe I'm in a fight, fright, a flight level, and I'm doing this vampirous sucking energy versus resourcing the energy back around. When we know how to resource the energy back around, we say, okay, I do have a skill. Because you got skills. Everybody got skills. It's just
right.
the idea. Don't put someone in the skill, depending on their skill, fully, that you don't use your skill. Now, that is where the issues are starting, where you got vampires. Like, I can't do this. I don't know that. I won't know that. I don't want to know that. I'm not going to learn that. I should learn that, but I'm not doing that. Yeah. So you're all skilled out, at least that's what you're calling. This is why a lot of us are not feeling like we are a supernatural being. Now, where does this come from? Not eating right.
Mm.
And you would say, well,
that
why start
huge.
There? Right. Why start there? Why start even there? Because this is what you keep putting back in your body as you speak it to be in your body. Now, I have people come in
Can
here
I
saying, it's too cheap. It's too cheap. It's too cheap. I'm cheap on myself.
Come on.
I buy cheap food.
I want to share with you something, too, after you finish your point. Go ahead.
And when they say, I want to buy the cheap food, okay, buy the cheap food. But now you're doing an expensive price for your body. So you're still running back into another circle. It's just a different circle. It's just a harsher now circle. Like, now I got thyroid problems. I need issues with this. I need some capsules to help me. And it's like, these are the things that's here. However, you could really soft that up before you get there. It's like the nursery rhymes, changing them. Come with the solutions before we say, oh, this is the problem. We're going to always have a problem. Don't go all the way towards the pothole. look at what's around it before you start going towards the pot. Look around. You got other ways of looking. You don't have to look at the ground the whole time when you come into it. Sit down in it for a second. Stand up in it. Make a stance at one point where you feel like, I ain't going to drink today. I know everybody drinking. I ain't drinking today. I'm going to not drink today. And see what happens. See, does it change you? Don't always go to the pothole. That's like a man. You're being attracted to it. It's attraction.
But I love the pothole.
Oh, there's a pothole. Boom. I'm in it. Oh, I'm in it, y'all. I'm in the pothole, y'all. Now it's like, you got to change the tire. You know how to change the tire? You got the lug nuts? What you got? You got your.
Yeah.
I'm going to stop there so you can get your point.
Yes, because here's a great segue to insert my point is that what I am finding is that hey, come on, I'm sorry, let me get my dog in here. Come on, let's go. Come on. What I am finding is even when it comes to healthy eating, and when it comes to healthy eating, and also shifting subconscious these deep subconscious habits that we have embedded. What I am finding, even though it's like we're subconsciously just trained to do it without the self-discipline to want to do better, because we always go back to it because that's what we are so used to doing. We lack the knowledge and the willpower to discipline ourselves to eat healthier foods, or to stop drinking that alcohol. Now there are brinks and times to where we do break those patterns and habits, but we always find ourselves right back at it. So you ask yourself,
come on,
okay,
there we go.
You ask yourself, okay, why? You know I'm speaking about myself, right? So, we all do it. So, in admission, in
why?
Transparency,
why?
In transparency, which actually
that's
helps
cooter.
You, those patterns, okay?
Yeah,
hear
exactly.
me, y'all.
And that's the, yeah.
Transparency and vulnerability.
You don't know it.
Helps you to break those patterns. So in doing that, what I am finding, and this is with the eating, I cannot, even with the awareness that I am aware about all of this stuff, I cannot go to some of the same foods and truly eat it. Like, I'll literally gag. Like,
right.
Body is starting to tell me now that,
go.
Eternal, I had to have the trial and error, though. I had
trial
and error, the back and forth, the stumbling on my,
empathy.
That I know that I need to do better, the sickness that came out of all of it.
That's
I had to have it all. See, when the lessons are coming up again now, it's like, okay, wait.
Are you
gonna
listen?
Damn well.
You're right.
Are you gonna listen? And then sometimes we and sometimes we even
man, forget
still
that.
Don't
right.
listen.
Yeah. I mean,
who
blames
us? And then there comes the chronic illness. It's like, okay, you've been warned 1,000 times. Now, here we go.
Life lesson.
This
is life lesson.
I just have to share that. For anybody that's listening, just know that your whole process, time's up.
Yep.
That is what we're saying, you guys. Time is up. And I promise you guys, there are things in my life that I can just let people know. I can cut things off and I can just let. But there are things in my life that it is harder for me to shake. Here is the thing. Life is saying, even for me, time is up, and you know darn well time is up. What the hell are you doing?
I'm speaking for myself, too. Yeah, you're right. That's it.
This show is
the conversation
important.
Is not.
The
conversation is not built for everybody on an external conversation. The conversation is built for internal just as much. So it can be an eternal concept, not from me, from the etheric energy that we all collectively come from, that we all say, man, I'm thinking of some stuff. Man, let me put this out. So it's like, where do we put it at? when we say we vent, right, where do you put your vents at? Because you do have some kind of ventilation that comes out. Then you're like, okay, I feel a lot better. Man, that was great. So just like the car, you ride in it, it has a thermostat. It has a ventilator. It has that connection to where the heat and all of that, it got to go somewhere. So as far as your radiation, I mean, radiator, that helps out your radiation, basically. The more rays you bring up, the different of the rods you have in your body. So just like as the rainbow, you can have a serpent rainbow. You can have a positive, optimistic dragon versus that negative dragon, that drag on thing. You know, the word drag on is the same word. That's why these are supposed to be familiar tunes to you so that your ancestors will always be near you. You just didn't know how close they were to you, right? Because they say in the beginning was the word, and the word was God, and as God, so is God. So as in the beginning, you're saying the word. If you put an S on it, it's word. But if you turn the S on the front of it, it's sword. You're using a sword. They either double-edged, cut, slice things that you can actually say. So when you seesaw it, you're basically you're balancing it or you're cutting it, you're slicing it up. Yet that X is the same thing as that seesawing it, cutting it up. So as a cross, we come with either the familiar deity, as most people would know, is Eshu or Elekba, Ottoman Dore's energy through how we bring out these conversations through the crossroads. Meet me at the crossroads, why they call Bone Thugs and Harmony. There are familiar ways to speak to us by the ancestral path that gives you empathy, that you can hear it empathically. Now that you can sympathize with it. So now you can say, okay, now I can go through Ogun. And Ogun can now clear a wave for you. And now you can see the green and everything. So now they say, oh, here's the money.
Yeah.
Yet you're in the money now. And you say, okay, now I can rape people. Not knowing that you're raping people. And you're raping at the same time. So now it changes the inner rate of thought. So you're inert to your inertia. It changes. So now it's the vibration of vibratorial energy that you're doing. And when you say vibration of vibratorial, it can change that too from now is sexual, S-E-X, see the X, or now sensual with a S-E-N. That's like sue. We say sue or sew ourselves into things. That's why when we say we need things, it's really how you sewing into things versus how you seesaw it, cutting it off. You're always, we're all going to say certain things that we feel like we're impaired by. However, if we put pair like parents, you're putting it together with your ENT, which is your neck. This is where the X come from. Everything has this vortex concept that whether it's an X sign, right, or a plus sign, or even saying four. Four is still an X in our mind. Because, see, we use it Romanly. That's why we say romantic. All that about Rome, the phone Rome, you in more aspect backwards. That's all. It's just the thought of they want people to speak backwards in order to not see what's forward. Now, if I say four words, I'm still speaking in that X. This is a point of how you got into feeling. Everything's based on feelings almost. Not saying fully, almost. Yet,
yeah.
It's a feeling that helps us because we get it through emotion. If you were not emotional, you wouldn't connect to it. Peace, brother. But if you have feelings, you're connected just as much as the emotion. And you're a two-way to now three-way band. And now your radio band frequency end up explaining more to you. How do your midframe and your framework work together? And when we say midframe and framework, midframe is inside, right? Because I said midframe and framework, that's your whole body. Once you work with the one and the two, that's how you see three. See, we say masculine and feminine. Yeah, everybody has to become a child and everything. So not saying we're talking chastising. It's just that we have to be in tune with our child, psycho-child-ish ways. And that's why it becomes two, become four, across. You come across to everything. But now putting your head down is like saying, do you bow your head down or do you look at who you're bowing to? Because you could be bowing to yourself just because, oh, I ain't got to bow. Who am I bowing my head to? And then are you bowing that you get your head cut off? Because you could just bow and not even look at who you're supposed to be looking at. I ain't saying you got to keep your eyes on your opponent. I'm saying keep your eyes on everything as much as possible.
Yeah.
So you won't have to just stay in the tunnel vision. People get tunnel vision. You ever run to somebody's car and you're like, hey, 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 and they couldn't see you because they got the music blasting. They windows are up, and, you know, they about to speed off.
But it's like that with people. Like people, I've been posting this for like a week, this week actually, Eternal, outside of themselves. People cannot see anything outside of themselves. That's the tunnel vision I feel you're talking about.
Right. And that's what it means that, yes, when religion is put into us, and I'm not blaming religion, you can still have religious aspect. You still can be spiritual in your aspect. What I'm saying is, don't let it block your peripheral. Don't let it block your open avenue of, like, if I had a book in my hand, right, and I said, this is the only book I could go by. And I'm like, okay, well, here, come do some plumbing with me. You'd be like, oh, wait a minute, let me look at my book. You're like, all right, go on, look in your book. I said, what does it say about this size? Do we need this size or that size? You go, wait a minute, let me look. Yeah. We're going to have to do some newness with your oldness. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you can always reference yourself out of a book, but then you got to have other references for that book. And then references for, you ever heard a lie?
No, I'm sorry, Eternal. I just stepped in with my dad real quick, so give me like 2 minutes. Go ahead and talk. I'm sorry.
Okay,
I can't hear you, though.
All right. Okay. Oh, you good. Whenever you hear a lie, you know it's based off just like hearing the truth, right? And in that aspect, when you hear the truth, you know that it's always been there. If you heard a lie, you're going to research it to find out what's there. Like, wait a minute, something's not catching. Something's not clicking. So it end up being like in your mind, you'll wait for it to happen even. And then it eventually will happen. Us that want to see truth will always see truth, whether it's from the past or from the present or even the near future. It's not like it's a game. You don't have to play a game with truth. It's you playing truth as a game. We're all running around like, oh, I'm going to be artificial for a moment. Wait a minute. I shouldn't be artificial. Okay, let me just be some realness. I'll do some real stuff. And that's when you'll find out that truth is you. You're the truth to yourself and all what you put out as the image. And after a while, your image shows at what you're doing, your reflection. That my brother said earlier, he's about reflection. That's a great word for today. Reflect to self. How much enthusiasm do you give self? Because you can always go to do New Year's and Christmas and Halloween, all of these things that does not even entertain your brain to the higher resource of you. If you calling it a higher resource, then cool. If not, then this is who I'm speaking to. If you are wanting to see something different, then do something different. Putting a mask on and saying, oh, I'm a trick or treat with these children and have them go into the same dormant sugar, when, you know, us as adults, when we get as adults, we can eat as much sugar as we want. And then after that, we can drink as much alcohol as we want. But now imagine that. You're not going to drink alcohol and you eat sugar. That's just too much sugar. So you're going to be more of a salt person. What I notice about salt and sugar is we can eat so much salt and then eventually we're going to want some sugar to balance it out. We're walking, moving crystals. So as that, just like a tree, the sun hits it. 75% of the sunlight can hit that tree, and that tree still has all the bark going around it. Being that that's the case, right? The other side has to have a way and ability to still grow, even though it's not getting that percentage of that sun at all. With that being the case, it has to have some what we call moss to help the other side still have a whole circle of itself. So that's just like you seeing not your backside of who you are. And then eventually you will, because you have a sweet side. If I have a sweet side, you might have a salty side. So just like a sweet and a salty side to the tree, it shows you how the sun hits you one way, right, and how the moon hits you in another way, to where the moon is giving you basically that soft, dark, the luminous side, just like how the sun hits you that hot, dry, and it could be even bitterness side. It just depends on how do you use your frequency. So as a tree, the tree is like the highest point from getting the temperature and getting the coolness from each other. The temperature, the hot and the cold from each other. So now when you see the wet and the dry from each other. So that's the point of why I'm saying mixtures, how we mix with the X is still a mix. Everything basically has an X in it to become external. Even though we're saying, I'm talking about my internal situation. Like if I pinch you, even though I'm saying the word you, right? You is not singular. You is plural. So when we say me or I, you're still speaking plural. You just don't think as that. And so even when a person want to say, you did this, they'd be like, hold on. You talk about me? And so now that's the argument in itself, too. So it's just like, how do we speak to each other? Are we really in our language? Or do we speak a colonized form to the language to now call it not even our language?
Aha. Okay. Okay.
Because you have many ways to speak. Right? Don't you have many ways to speak?
Are we even aware of how we speak? Do we even care?
Oh, okay. You know. Here's that tunnel. Here's that peripheral tunnel vision.
Now,
you can call on God, but you can say God already been in you long time ago. Now, you can wait on God. However, God been, whatever you've been speaking on about God, okay, let's just keep on going. This is nature. Nature is a part of nurture, right? If it's not nature, how do you feel natural? If you've been feeling unnatural, why do you keep speaking about unnatural when you're supposed to be speaking like you're supposed to say it natural? Yeah, maybe you didn't see yourself as natural. So now you do a lot of unnatural things, calling that natural. Is it natural or does it have no nurture to it? No, it's okay. It's definitely okay.
Yeah.
I'm not, now, because I'm speaking this way, don't take me for this.
No.
Yeah, this is how we got to speak to each other so we can say, oh, dang, this is meaningful, versus like the dog ran over the fence. You're like, dog ran over the fence? I don't even sound like it had no energy in it. You hear bland people speak, like, this is why people really went to church. They went to church to feel that energy. Not just say, oh, it's a great day today, y'all. Yes, praise the Lord, praise the Lord. He's like, wait a minute now. Let's get some rivety in here. Let's get some vibration. Where the vibration at? You're supposed to hit my vibratorial energy. So once you hit me in the vibratorial energy, I can say, okay, now I'm feeling something about what you're talking about. Because really, you might be talking off your path. You might be talking like you've been reading it, and this is verbatim, yet you don't have none of you in it. When you make a dish, right, do you look at the ingredients and you put it verbatim? And then you be like, this don't even taste right. Maybe because it's missing you in it.
I never do.
You're missing
you know
your
what?
Part
the
in
main
it.
Ingredient, the main ingredient is love. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, come on.
That's
there
what
it
makes
is.
It taste
you done spoke
good.
It.
That's
okay,
what
come
makes
on.
It taste good.
What? It'll be some bitter itter. Like, what did you just make? Ah, this is nasty. Yeah. I don't know who thought this was tasting good. And then you take it, well, I thought it was good. You thought it was good. It's for your taste.
Yeah.
Good. Yes.
Yeah.
You don't know
but
how to
I mean,
tease anybody else because you probably haven't. Yeah.
That's tunnel vision. You know, you didn't even care about
it.
You tasted it and it was good. So you didn't even put the thought in it that, you know, maybe this isn't good.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you know God served God?
You said God what?
You know, God serve concept that came up with
said
God serve. Yeah, God serve, S-E-R-V-D.
No, I've never heard that term.
Yeah, like, you ever cook for someone?
I have cooked for someone, yep.
And they said one who knows how to cook is knowing how to be a God that gives for
others. Oh, I have heard that. Okay, I'm with you. Okay, yep.
So it becomes a point where you know your calling because it's a point of like how they call it service. Not everybody's good for service though because they like I said earlier we were talking about
what
being distorted. And if you think of what distorted is, it's like how I was saying earlier about the tree. The tree happens to get sunlight 75%, while the other side is moonlight. And the moonlight hit it. Now you see the perceptions of what sun and moon do. The sun and moon do what the tree's sitting there. Can't move around and get, oh, let me turn around and get some of that sun like y'all do. No, it can't. So it has to use what's around it to still grow the way it's growing. So now you got the moss, which helping that. So if you think about the protozoa, the fungi, what ways do we eat like copper that's going to help our body, the zinc, the manganese, magnesium? How much do we really put on the getting rid of the depression, the stress? Your nervous system is based on a structure in the body. So as far as in the body to the bone structure, the muscles, the tissues, how do they actually move without feeling fatigued? And you got to do this every day. So it's like the car, like the radiator, that, you know what I mean, if you don't put any water or any kind of fluid in it, the body's just like how that structure is, just like how the tree is. The tree actually getting, now, who's watering the tree? I'm just saying. Are we actually getting up literally and say, oh, I got to go water the tree? Now, I notice us and people, we have plants in our building, in our foundation. So we take out our pot, you know, a water pot, and put the water in there. So we putting the water all around it, you know what I mean? And if it's alive, I mean, showing longevity, the plant will last forever. However, if you neglect that plant, you walk away, don't think about that plant, don't talk to the plant, the leaves start falling apart, it starts to just brittle away. Out here in nature, nature's all, like the trees, all these trees are up. No one's telling these trees to go down or get up. And so because of that, we have to look at ourselves in that higher, we have a higher middle self to this left and the right of thinking. Whether you say you good, whether you say you bad, you're going to always say there's a good thing. You're always going to say there's a bad thing. However, there's also a neutral thing. And there's that where you're natural at the most, being neutral to a lot of the, it's not working the way you want it. Great. Okay. It's not working the way you want it. And I said, great. Yes, I did. So you can see there's an opposition to not so great. We might just get frustrated for a second. That's one of the body parts that we can't get frustrated at. And it doesn't matter to stay there. We can just move into the next body part, work into the next body part. Stretch out that body part if it's all fatigued, stretched out, like, or get some mustard. If this is what we look at, like, what's helping us not only mentally, physically, spiritually, we can do a physical, being that there's the food that we were just speaking on, how to use it, rose hip for citrine versus, I'm thinking of the stone, for citrus energy that helps with the vitamin C. We definitely need vitamin C. Vitamin D, there's different types of vitamin D. So don't just look at one vitamin D. And that's why the calcium that we're thinking about coming from a cow, we're thinking we're getting the right additives. It might not be the way we think it is. So you have time to really reevaluate yourself. I had high blood pressure at 16. Had reevaluated at 30 because I was getting ready to hit still the wrong way once I still thought I was doing the right thing. And now I'm more strict than I am than all of those times. I do a lot of fasting before I even eat. I do drink a lot of water. I'm more getting geared towards what vegetarian and as well as the raw life. I'm 80-20 right now. I mean 80-20, which is 80% leaf and 20% solid. So, yeah, we can just come up with ways to eat. Make your vibration your vibratorial energy so that way when you say the time is up for yourself, you can actually do certain things. Like, I'm still doing cartwheels, and I want to show even the younger youths how to do it, you know? Then you say you got skills of, you don't have to say, okay, I don't have skills of. Maybe you must have to just simplify your way to, like, one or two basic things and stay on those one, two basic things till you can apply a third one. And then Once you get 1, 2, 3, then you can apply a fourth one. And then just keep your rhythm going, because for real, there's challenges. All the challenges that have you wake up when you see what you're realizing. Be your truth. The truth is who you are. You know?
Mm-hmm.
And once you're in your truth, you can stand on that more than anything.
And, you know, you talk about the duality a lot. You know what I'm saying? You talk about the sun, the moon, the, you know, the everything, the up, the down. And, you know, it's okay. You know, it's okay, like our shadow self. Like, if you listen to Enhancing Awareness Radio, if you go back to the archives, you'll know that your shadow self, to me, I feel that your shadow self is really your true power. You know, that stuff that we don't really like about ourselves.
Right.
You know, when you start to embrace it, and when you start to understand, you know, maybe instead of looking and seeing things in television, here's an opportunity to maybe look at things a little different. And you can do it in your own way. You know, some of us like to control or will our, you know, that's okay. But see, here's the thing. The thing about energy is that energy is shifting, you guys. Time is up. Energy is shifting. Life is going with a current. Life is going with a current with or without us. So it's kind of like, you know, we either going to put up or shut up. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, you know, time's up. I mean, I can't even say no more. You know, this was good. This was good.
Yes.
So this is a stopping point. Let's go ahead and stop it here. Thank you, thank you, thank you to everybody who's listening. We definitely appreciate you guys. Please make sure that you join us every weekend at 11 a.m. Eastern, 10 Central, here at Enhancing Awareness Radio. Excuse me. To those, you know, who have COVID, if you want to give them some remedies, if you go to our Facebook group,
Elderberry.
I just made a cocktail this morning, you know, with elderberries in it. You know what I'm saying? So make sure you're drinking those remedy cocktails, you know. Ferrante made a great point on the post. At the root of it all is, you know, how we're eating and what we're ingesting and what we're putting out to body. There is the, if you're eating unhealthy, and you know what I'm saying, there is no remedy that you can take, you know, that's going to, you know what I'm saying? So, you know, I thought, and that's true at the root. That's true at the root, you know what I'm saying? But, I, you know, as I was telling him, though, you know, all of life, there are levels. There are levels to this stuff, guys. You know what I'm saying? So in or, so until you get there, a remedy won't hurt. So please go to our Facebook group, Enhancing Awareness Radio, and look for that post, guys. It's COVID remedies. Look for that post, guys. So there's definitely some information there to help you. Same time every weekend. Definitely appreciate you guys. And, hey, time's up. And you know what? No one is immune. All right. Peace and love. Tony, you can go ahead and take us out.
It's life. Life, how you have to be, you know. Be more in tune with your life. Realize what's the push and what's the pull. You know, you're the unmovable. Once you find out how that unmovable is, like the irrebreakable energy, the trinity, the triangle, not to say just try, T-R-Y, just the T-R-I, the trinity, the tribunal, the trine, T-R-I-N-E. If you want to use these words, realize that the Y is masculine. So much when we say why, that's why it becomes a point. The point is a why. That's the triangle. So use your words as you're seeing the words as your strength, not just a weakness. So when you say I'm weak, change it to be strong. Use your strength. Say birthday being a born day or a actual strength day, you know, an earth day. How do you get in tune with yourself to the earth versus just 9 months? You become 12. Then once you see 12, there's a 13 to go into. How do you complete that 1, 2, 3 to become 12 and 13? Resurrect. How some say it's the resurrection to self, but it's a wreck to yourself. You don't wreck yourself. Of course, you're reckless or wreckful. See this as the erection of thought. How you erectile, like that, say, a crocodile, or after a while, alligator. Your mind of the gator thought. How you G with the aider thought. So the mind of a generator. You are that higher part, the wisdom, the wise dome, not just a knowledge of knowing, the knowledge known, a way of knowing all the time, the nowness in self. Ashe. Ashe to your universe, your eons. I say, ooh.
Beautiful, sexy, easy, 1, 2, 3.
I want you to put your hands together and welcome him to the stage. Big round of applause.
That boy's good. That boy's good.
Good and terrible.
Thank you.
The royal penis is clean, Your Highness.
Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
Yeah.
Let it shine. Let it shine.
Which one of y'all
gonna shine?
Let it shine.
I
like to give big round thoughts to my band. Sexual chocolate. Sexual chocolate. Sexual chocolate. Sexual chocolate. My band, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate.
Nigga be hurt for life, ho be hurt for life. Nigga be hurt, she don't die for real. She just hate niggas for life. Hurt people, can't you see?
More the program from the project. Since the project to stop your progress, keep you obsessed with fancy objects, to crack your third eye, it's the process. It's the hot mess out here for a melanated nigga. I say meditating nigga.
Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine. Let it shine.
Which one of y'all gon'
shine?
Big round thoughts in my band. Sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, my band. Sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate, sexual chocolate.
Yeah, damn, homie, I invoke the dead. Homies on the other side to bring this shit back alive, back alive, alive. No one really died. You sound hurt. All you do is complain. You the face of the niggas ain't shit campaign. 7 circuits in your brain. You addicted to pain. Addicted to the chemicals that get released in your veins. Just let your soul go.
Let it shine.
Like which one of y'all gon'
shine?
My ladies, make it clap.
Why you clap and move?
Make it clap, 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 clap,
clap, clap, clap.
If you feel it in your soul, make it clap.
Why you clap and move?
All my ladies, make it clap.